the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
McCoy at the 10, at the 5, into the end zone. Touchdown! And a great run. He's in trouble. He is dropped. Kyle Williams dropped it. Oh, baby, what a hit. Tyrod looks. Tyrod on the run. Nobody in front of him. Touchdown! There's T-Mobile into the end zone. McCoy cuts to the right. Outrunning everybody. 10, 5. Touchdown! Touchdown! Touchdown, Buffalo!
Live from One Bills Drive, this is the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts.
Good afternoon. Welcome to a Tuesday afternoon at One Bills Drive, Orchard Park, New York, 14127. John Murphy, Donald Jones coming to you from the One Buffalo. That was the most insincere smile I think I've ever seen. That was like a classic TV smile.
I was trying to figure out what you were just
14127. That's the zip code here.
I mean, I know that, but I was trying to figure out where that even came into play.
Just looking for a different way to start the show. Just trying to get us off on a different foot here as we talk about the Bills on this Tuesday. Players' Day off. Donald and I here to talk about it and here to talk about you. We are at the midseason point. We spent a considerable amount of time in yesterday's show talking about the Bills at midseason. We're going to do it again today because it's that important. And we have Wednesday, Thursday, Friday to get ready, to get you ready to talk about the New Orleans Saints. So I still got more to talk about midseason, don't you, Donald?
I think so. I think there's still a lot that we need to learn about this team. Yesterday, obviously, we talked about the offense, but we need to talk about the defense. And the defense, to me, is I think we got a lot to learn about this defense. I think we thought we knew who they were, but I don't know if we know who the defense is, you know?
What if I told you that the Buffalo defense in midseason, in terms of rankings in the league, is worse than it was at the end of last year? Would you be surprised by that, Donald Jones?
I think I would be surprised.
I would too, but it's true. Last year, the Bills defense ranked 19th in the league. Right now, at midseason, the Bills defense is ranked 22nd. They are 8th against the run, pretty good. They are 26th against the pass, not so good. Pressure, you know, as far as registered in sacks, 28th.
Right.
Again, a number of sacks per pass play. That's not good either.
No.
And I think even it's one thing to say I'd be surprised based on where they were a year ago. I'm surprised where they're ranked now compared to where they were 4 weeks ago, to be honest with you. The last 4 weeks have kind of been an eye-opener. Points per game, still pretty solid. The Bills ranked 5th. In the league in points allowed per game.
And ultimately that's what matters, you know, when you're not giving up a lot of points. Now, they probably would be higher if they didn't give up as many points. I don't know, the last 3 weeks have been kind of rough, you know. But they would be higher if they haven't given up those points in these last three games. But that's really what matters. If you're ranked in the top 10 in points per game in defense, that's good, you know. And they're up there in turnovers. Last week they didn't get those turnovers. But the rest of those stats, you know, that is what makes you scratch your head because it's like, okay, I've always said this is a bend but don't break type of defense. But, man, you know, teams are able to pass the ball on this defense, you know, until they get down into the red zone and everything kind of clamps down. Last week, you know, the Jets were able to rush the ball on this defense, and that's not something that this team had given up really all year, you know. So I think we still have a lot to learn about this defense. It's going to be interesting to see how this second half of this season plays out, especially passing or against the pass because you have so many good quarterbacks that you're going to play and starting Sunday.
You know, we talked about that stretch where the Bills were having trouble moving the ball, right, and about the defenses they were up against for a couple of weeks. Mm-hmm. And then we talked about how things looked like they would ease up a little bit for the offense against opponents' defenses. And they did against the Jets, Oakland, Tampa Bay. And even New Orleans, not a very high defensive – I don't think they're a very high defensive ranking. But let me check. At least on paper, it didn't look like that tough. Well, they're 15th in the league.
Well, yeah.
But what we didn't account for back then was the offenses the Bills would go up against, the injuries they would have on offense, and the fact that, you know, points per game. Now, there was a point where the Bills were giving up – I think it was four games in. They're giving up 13.5 points per game. Right now, they're giving up 18.6 points per game for the first half of the season. So – what's going on here? I think it's pretty simple, Donald. The takeaways.
Right.
The takeaways by the defense for that stretch that ended in the Jets game. They covered up, they masked a lot of deficiencies that were taking place on the Buffalo, on the defensive side of the ball. Now, the takeaways count. They were important. They were made. They weren't luck.
Right.
I mean, the guys are in there raking the ball out. There was a takeaway mentality. It worked, but they did dry up against the Jets. And all of a sudden, the Bills are up against it, just trying to stop somebody without the benefit of takeaways. I think when you look back at, say, the last four games and how the Bills have given up a lot of points to the point where their average points per game now is 18.5, but think about it. You know, they gave up 20 points to Cincinnati. They gave up 27 to Tampa Bay, only gave up 14 to Oakland, but 34 points to the Jets. You know, they're giving up points because and all of that was covered up by the fact that they got takeaways. The takeaways dried up, and all of a sudden the defense
That's exactly what it's been. This defense has been creating these turnovers, and so we thought, like, man, this defense is good. They're getting turnovers. They were playing good against the run, but those turnovers were masking everything. It truly was masking everything. And then when they dry out, you know, it's like, okay, now what can you do? Can you stop a team now? Can you truly stop a team and force those three and outs? Can you do that? Can you get off the field on third down? Can you get off the field maybe on a fourth and short, something like that? You know, can you stop a team from converting on fourth down? They haven't been able to really do that, you know. They've just been creating those turnovers and getting the ball back to the offense. And that's all good, but it's always going to come down to, because you're not going to always get turnovers. The Saints actually have been living and dying off of turnovers, and they're a six-game winning streak that they're on right now. But you can't just live and die off of turnovers, because when that doesn't come, can your offense drive down the field consistently and score points? And can your defense stop teams from scoring points and stop teams from getting so much yards? Look, the yards count too. When you talk about field position, you can't just give up yards, and yards, you know, because teams can kick field goals or they'll just always punt it, and you'll always be backed up inside your 10, which is what this offense has seen a lot of this year, backed up inside, you know, their own 10-yard line and trying to dig themselves out of a hole.
So this discussion on the midseason point where the Bills are at midseason, today we focus on the defensive side of the ball and where they are on defense. Yesterday we dealt with the offense. We take it right to our Twitter poll. Who is the Bills' midseason defensive MVP? Yesterday we did the offensive MVP at midseason. It turned out to be, by your vote, quarterback Tyrod Taylor. But today, who is the Bills' defensive MVP at midseason? We offer a couple of suggestions, and so far Micah Hyde, a free agent acquisition at safety, is the number one choice. 66%, about two-thirds of you say Micah Hyde, who leads the league in interceptions, is the defensive MVP. 19% say the rookie corner, Tre'Davious White, who's had big plays on the defensive side of the ball. Big plays for and against, we should say. 13% say Jordan Poyer, the other free agent acquisition at safety. 2% have somebody else in mind. Just like yesterday, I think this is a difficult question, Donald, because the defense has been a bit of a mixed bag for the first half of the season with big plays, big takeaways, timely takeaways. The takeaways did come in bunches, but there also is now a pattern of them giving up yards, particularly through the air. So let's hear from you. Who do you think is the Bills' midseason defensive MVP? It does not have to be one of our choices. It could be somebody else. Give us a call. The lines are open. 803-0550 is the number to call. Toll free from outside Buffalo, 1-888-550-2550. Or you can do it on Twitter at John Murphy Show. And a couple of tweets have already come in. Samantha Harrington tweets in, tough choice. It is a tough choice. Based on what they've done defensively, the good and the bad. Lead the Stampede tweets in, Micah Hyde all the way. I was stoked when they signed him, and he has not disappointed. He could be a problem if he keeps up his strong play. Not quite sure what that means. John Dubik says Micah Hyde, but I think a case can be made for Kyle, not just being a great player, but also what he does as a teammate and a locker room presence. You can make that case. And Todd Mancuso tweets in, how is Tre'Davious White an option? He's played well for a rookie and made some nice plays, but he's also by far given up the most big plays of anyone on the defense. I think that's true. I also think that's a function of where Tre'Davious White is and what they're asking him to do, play against typically the top receiver on the other team.
I've said this. Rookies are always going to have their rookie moments. I don't care who he is. You know, quarterback, running back, whatever position, wide receivers, DBs, but DB is hard to do. DB and quarterback, those are the two, I think, the hardest positions to play in this game, you know, and to learn from in your rookie year. Mm-hmm. It's really hard to make that transition from college to the pros. Now, Tre'Davious White has been playing some of the best receivers in the NFL week in and week out, all right? And so, yeah, he's given up some big plays, but he's the one that has to cover these dudes every down, and it's not easy to do. I'm sorry. I don't care how good you are as a rookie. It's not easy to cover these guys week in and week out and have to follow them around the field. You have some games where he's following guys. Other games, it doesn't even make sense to follow because you've been playing teams that have two good wide receivers. Think about it. They played Tampa that have two good wide receivers. They played Oakland that have two good wide receivers. Atlanta, their receivers got hurt. He played against Cincinnati with A.J. Green. We all know what A.J. Green could do. I mean, those games right there, it's like, man, I got to face another one. The Broncos, you know, with Demaryius Thomas and Emmanuel Sanders. It's tough to play against these dudes week in and week out. He's a rookie trying to do it, you know, and so he still has a lot to learn, but he has made some big plays for this team in crucial parts of the game. You know, he's bounced back. Even though he's given up some big plays, he has bounced back to usually make a bigger play, you know, to help out this team and help them eventually win the game. But for me, I think I'd have to go with Micah Hyde on this one, you know, just because, yeah, he leads the league in interceptions. He makes tackles. He's playing all over the field. For me, he's the quarterback of the defense, the back end of that defense. He gets everybody lined up where they're supposed to be. And for me, the biggest thing is he's been out there. You know, Jordan Poyer, as good as Jordan Poyer has been this year, he has been hurt, you know, and he's missed, what did he miss, two games? I think two
games.
Just
one, right?
Just one. Well, it's hard for me to go with somebody as an MVP when you miss games. It's just like yesterday with Charles Clay. You know, he missed, what, three games or something like that. I can't vote you as the MVP or think that you are the MVP regardless of how good you might be playing because you've been hurt, you know. And so Jordan Poyer, I don't know if it's one or two games. It might just be one game, but he has been hurt. And so I think I'd have to go with Micah Hyde, you know, the league leader in interceptions.
You know what? He is not no longer leads the league in interceptions, as a matter of fact, but he's right up there. I believe he is second in interception in the league. But that aside, we know how well he has played for the Buffalo Bills, and we want to get a sense from you. Who is the MVP on defense for the Buffalo Bills? Who do you think it is? Kevin Byard of Tennessee has six. Micah Hyde now with five picks. Who is the Bills' midseason MVP? Give us a call. The lines are open. 803-0550 is the number. Toll-free 1-888-552-550 or on Twitter at John Murphy Show. Lines open right now. Who's the Bills' midseason defensive MVP? Quiet day here in One Bills Drive today. Players off, although several of them in for conditioning work and some treatments. The New Orleans Saints coming to town on Sunday. Check the weather. Early forecast calls for cloudy skies at kickoff. Slight chance of rain and a high of just 43 degrees. So bring that dome team out here to Orchard Park in November and let's see how they like it here, right? On the show today, we got a pretty good one. We're going to talk with one of the newest Buffalo Bills, running back Travaris Cadet, coming up on the show. He'll be with us at 12:30. Is he in studio on the phone? I don't even know.
I'm not sure. They don't talk to us about what's going on out here.
Who's they?
Our producers.
Travaris Cadet, one way or another, in studio with us at 12:30, I'm told. Travaris Cadet, new running back with the former Saint. He's got a pretty extensive NFL resume. He'll be with us at 12:30. Steve Tasker, I know he'll be in studio at 1 o'clock with a variety of things to talk with Steve about, Bills-related and the NFL. Coming up at 1:30, Donald Jones with Nuts and Bolts, his regular Tuesday feature where he breaks down the game from his perspective as a former player. And you're going to show us about Kelvin Benjamin today. What are you going to show us today?
Just show some of his plays, you know, touchdowns, what he likes to do. I want to talk about, you know, how he plays and how Tyrod needs to, you know, this is going to be a little bit different for Tyrod, you know, and let's see if Tyrod can make these throws or if he gets used to making these throws because he's going to have to make some tight window throws to Kelvin Benjamin and just, you know, trust that Kelvin Benjamin will come down with the ball. So we're going to break down some of his routes and things that he likes to do.
All right, that's coming up at 1:30. Donald with Nuts and Bolts coming up at 2 o'clock. Our visit with Trey Wingo from ESPN, the host of ESPN's NFL Live. He'll go throughout the entire league for us, essentially, and tell us what the league thinks of the Bills right now at midseason and what about what's going on around the rest of the league. So that's the lineup for today. In the meantime, we're talking about the Buffalo defense, and we want to hear from you about this Buffalo defense. Who is the midseason most valuable player on the defensive side of the ball for the Bills? Give us a call. 803-0550 is the number. Toll-free from outside Buffalo, 1-888-550-2550. Or you can do it via Twitter, at John Murphy Show. You know, these defensive questions we have clearly in the minds of the Bills' decision-makers, including defensive coordinator Leslie Frazier, who met with the media today. The Bills not doing a lot of they haven't got a lot of sacks so far this season and not putting a lot of pressure on quarterbacks recently. And Leslie Frazier was asked yesterday if he is concerned about the lack of pressure on opposing quarterbacks.
Well, in our league, I mean, you've got to be able to affect the quarterback sometimes with your four-man rush or, you know, with a blitz package as well. So we got to find ways to affect the quarterback, and that also means some of the things we do on the back end with our looks and disguises. But you want to be able to pressure them at times, and there are many different ways to get that done. We got to find a way against a very good quarterback this week to not let him get comfortable in the pocket.
Well, that leads me to my next question. How important is it to get pressure on a quarterback like Drew Brees? Because you would think that if he has time to sit back there, it's going to be a long day.
I think most teams come into it with the idea of being able to get pressure on him, but I know going into yesterday's game, they've only been like 7 sacks. They were leading the league in the fewest sacks allowed. So it's a plan, but he gets the ball out so fast that you may not necessarily sack him, but you got to find ways to at least pressure him, and it's going to be important. I mean, he's a Hall of Fame, future Hall of Fame quarterback, and you really don't want it to be 7-on-7 for him.
8 sacks is the number. Drew Brees has been sacked 8 times so far for the New Orleans Saints in 8 games. By comparison's sake, are you ready for this? How many times do you think Tyrod Taylor's been sacked?
A lot more.
26 times. 3 times, more than 3 times as many sacks Tyrod Taylor compared to Drew Brees. The ball's coming out from Drew Brees.
Yeah, the ball is coming out. And you would think, like, man, Tyrod Taylor, that doesn't make sense because he can get out of pressure, you know. But the fact that he can get out of pressure, his style of play, he will hold the ball a little bit longer, you know. And yeah, sometimes you can't get out. It showed last week. Sometimes if they do it right, you won't be able to get out of that pressure. He wasn't able to get out last week, and you know, you get 26 sacks out of that. When the ball is coming out fast, you only get 8 sacks. It's going to be hard for this defense to get to Drew Brees this week.
Saints number 2 offense, number 1 in sacks allowed, number 4 in passing yards per game, number 6 in fewest interceptions, number 6 in points per game. It's a challenge for a Buffalo defense that has not been playing well, no question about
that.
Yeah,
this is going to be a tough game. You know, this is a tough matchup. But this is – we were talking about, you know, Tampa Bay and Oakland being a – those are must-win games. Well, first of all, they're all must-win games. But this game is a challenge for this team. It really is. It's at home. Obviously, you got to win your games at home. We're going to see if they can perform the same way on the road, you know, the New Orleans Saints. But Drew Brees is – He's a beast, you know, and so can they get to him? Can they, if they can't get to him, can they at least knock some passes down, bat some balls down at the line of scrimmage? Can these DBs stay on these wide receivers? Can the linebackers cover the running backs? Their running backs catch a lot of passes out of the backfield. The rookie, I can't remember his name. I can't think about how to pronounce his name right now. But he is the only one, I think he's
Kamara.
Kamara. He and someone else, they average like 3 catches a game, you know, and they're tied for first in the NFL, running backs catching the ball out of the backfield. This guy catches a lot of passes out of the backfield. So it's going to be a tough challenge for a guy like Ramon Humber or Matt Milano if they're in the game. And he's their guy right now. Like, he's playing very well. Last week he might have had – he had 1 or 2 touchdowns. He played very well last week. This is going to be a tough challenge.
What do you think about this Buffalo defense at midseason? The challenge coming up against New Orleans, but how have they performed so far? And who's the most valuable player on the Buffalo defense so far? Give us a call. Let us know. 803-0550. Toll free 1-888-550-2550. Lines are open. Let's go to Robert in Oregon. Hello, Robert. Welcome. You're on the air with us.
Hey, John. Hey, Donald. How are you guys doing?
Doing well.
Good, good. I gave you guys a call last week right before the trade deadline, and I talked to you about the need to add a weapon. I'm glad that they did that with Kelvin Benjamin.
Yeah.
And talking about the defense, I'm wondering if we need to do some more exotic looks and do what we can to put more pressure, whether it's bringing more people and going to more of a man defense. I'm wondering what your guys' thoughts are about that. I think the defensive line in general has been very quiet. I don't know if it's the kind of the blessing and curse of this rotation is that the guys aren't able to get into a groove against the offensive linemen and really – win those matchups consistently, but
that's
we're just
point.
Enough sacks and we're not seeing enough drives ending early without these turnovers.
Yeah, I've been talking a couple of weeks, Robert, thanks for your call. I've been talking a couple of weeks about the need for, look, I'm not saying go blitz happy here, but at least dial up pressure from time to time, not necessarily meaning you have to abandon the zone concepts that they have on the back end, but I do think they benefit from a couple of blitzes. And I haven't really thought about the defensive line rotation. When I saw in the summer in preseason how heavy that rotation was, how often they rotated people through. I distinctly recall saying to Mark Kelso, man, is this a good thing, taking these guys off the field? And it became clear after the way they shut teams down in the preseason and in the first 4 games of the regular season, I resigned myself to it. I said, okay, I'm good with that, the way they're playing.
But
maybe
it's
something they
should
revisit a little bit.
As a player, and this is not just wide receiver, any player on the field, you want to get into a groove, you know? Like, you, as a defensive lineman – you want to start to work your moves, right? And you have to set up different moves. Like, it's a chess match down in those trenches as well. For a defensive lineman, you know, he's working one move, and then, you know, all of a sudden, boom, he hits you with something else to counter that first move, and he gets a sack. Well, if he comes off the field, he never has a chance to really work those moves, you know? And so they want to get into a groove of the game. I understand being tired and all of that stuff. That's one side of it. But you do want to get into a groove of the game. It's hard to do when you're rotating so much. I do think that they need to dial up some pressure, though, you know, because they're not getting there with four. It's not happening. I don't know why it's gone silent, but they're not getting there with four. And so you need to switch some things up. And here's the thing. Drew Brees can eat you up. I don't care if you want to just rush four and drop everybody else back. He will eat that zone pressure, that zone up, you know. So you need to do some things to try to confuse him a little bit, you know. And he's getting the ball out fast, so you need to dial some things up just so that you can get close to him, you know, get him off his mark.
Bills defensive MVP at midseason. Who do you got? Give us a call, 803-0550 or toll-free from outside Buffalo, 1-888-550-2550, or via Twitter at John Murphy Show. A couple of tweets on this. Josh Tarbox says, my vote is for Preston Brown. He quarterbacks the defense and was a question mark going in. I had Preston as a possible option. You guys talked me out of it. You guys thought Tre'Davious White belongs in there, and I acquiesced because I thought, okay, I can see that. But
Preston Brown is a viable option.
Yeah,
definitely. The reason that I was saying put Tre'Davious up there is because he's made some big plays, you know, created some turnovers. You think about the Tampa Bay game, you know, he gave up the big play to Mike Evans, then came back and punched the ball out, created that turnover, and he's made some big plays.
Yeah.
You know, we've talked about him a lot for this first half of the season, so that's why I wanted to put him up there. Preston Brown is kind of in a position where he's making plays. He's playing very well. He's all over the field making tackles. But at that middle linebacker position, he's not making the big sexy plays.
Yeah.
You know, so that's why people sometimes forget about him in there.
You know, we were looking at video yesterday. We taped the Coach McDermott show yesterday. And looking at the interception by Micah Hyde in the Oakland game.
Preston tipped that.
That was Preston tip. And that was just a simple thing like getting the correct depth on his drop,
mm-hmm.
put him right in position to tip that pass up high right into the arms.
It was a great play.
Micah Hyde.
It was
really
a great
play
by him.
Preston.
I think like a couple plays before that, he had tipped one.
Yeah.
You know, and then that play, he tipped it again and went right into Micah Hyde's hands. That was a good play by him. A
couple of other tweets on this. Michael Conte said, I voted Micah Hyde, but Tre'Davious White deserves being acknowledged. Yeah, I think he deserves acknowledgement here. Michael Conte says, White was picked on the first couple of weeks, but teams quickly started throwing to the opposite side. Jim Ludwizek, Bill's midseason defensive MVP is Micah Hyde. He's always around the ball and in position to make the plays he has made. Bradley Nadal says, difficult to pinpoint one person as the defensive MVP. Would have to be between Hyde, Hauschka, and Poyer. How does Hauschka wind up on the defensive list? And here's one that's kind of funny from yesterday. Greg Torlone, Tyrod Taylor, he thinks, is the Bills' defensive MVP. And then he goes, this is a joke in reference to yesterday's show. People were confused yesterday when we were looking for offensive MVPs. A couple of people said Micah Hyde.
Yeah, they did.
Offense, defense, opposite sides.
He's trying to figure out where the thought process was. And it's like, are you confused?
Or are you being snarky?
Right? Probably the latter.
Give us a call, 803-0550, toll-free, 1-888-550-2550. Who do you got for the Bills' defensive most valuable player so far this season? We talked about the turnovers, how they had an incredible string. What did they have, 15 takeaways for the Buffalo defense and special teams in a five-week period, and then it all got shut down in the Jets game. And, you know, you have to wonder, was all of that smoke and mirrors, the turnovers, the takeaways by the defense, is that why they were winning those games, even with some defensive deficiencies? Leslie Frazier was asked that question yesterday. How much can a team rely on causing turnovers to carry them through a season, causing takeaways to carry them through a year?
Well, it's been proven if you take it away in our league, I mean, it's going to result in a greater win percentage for your team. So, we're going to continue to emphasize it and stress it and try to come up with those takeaways because we've seen, as you mentioned, the results for our team when it happens. And, you know, we didn't come up with that one that we had in our hands on Thursday night, which, you know, probably could have impacted the ball game, especially as early as it was. But it's something we're going to emphasize. You can win with that model. It's been proven. And when you don't get those takeaways, you got to find other ways to help your team. And because there are going to be moments or games where it may not happen. So then we got to find other ways to win. And so that's it in a nutshell. We're going to continue to emphasize it, and for whatever reason, if we come up short, we got to find other ways to affect the game.
Leslie Frazier, Bills defensive coordinator, referring back to that Leonard Johnson interception right in his hands, and not to pin blame anywhere, but that might. I agree with Coach Frazier. That could have changed the whole tenor of that game if he comes up with that interception. He might have scored, by the way.
Yeah.
But even if he didn't, it would have been. I think from a mindset standpoint, the Bills would have gone back to, all right, this is who we are. This is what we do. We take the ball away. We will cash in with a field goal or a touchdown off this takeaway. It didn't happen. The ball's right in his hands. It didn't happen. And I think, you know, if you believe in this sort of thing, I think there was a general, I don't know, doubt crept in when he had that ball in his hands and he could not hang on to it at the 30-yard line. Am I crazy there? It was almost like, all right, maybe this game is a little bit different than what we've become accustomed to the last 4 or 5 weeks.
Yeah, I can see where you're going there. But it was still so early in the game, you know, that it was like, all right, well, at least he was in position. That was my thought process. Like, at least he was in position. You know, it's not like this guy just got burnt or something like that. You know, he just didn't come up with the big play. But I can see your thought process like, uh-oh, all right, they didn't make that play. It didn't make any other plays either.
Right.
So it could have changed the outcome of the game. Maybe he would have scored. Even if he didn't score, he would have been on the 30-yard line. They ended up punting that thing out, you know, which you'd rather get the ball at the 30, the 25, 20-yard line, or possibly a pick six rather than to have to punt that thing the next play. The very good teams, the teams that end up in the playoffs, are the teams that make the big plays, all right? And the Bills didn't make the big plays
last week.
Yeah.
All right, we're just getting rolling here. We've got a pretty good show coming up at 1 o'clock. Steve Tasker is going to join us in studio. Donald's going to take us through nuts and bolts, Kelvin Benjamin's game, and what he might add to the Buffalo offense coming up at 1:30. Trey Wingo from ESPN, NFL reporter and the host of NFL Live on ESPN at 2 o'clock. Plus, we'll have NFL True and False at 2:30. And coming up next, Travaris Cadet, brand-new Bills running back, just signed to the roster the other day. He'll be joining us in studio, and we'll talk with him, and we will continue the discussion with you about this Buffalo defense. Who do you have for the Bills' midseason defensive most valuable player? And what do you see for this defense moving forward as the season rolls along? Lines will be open, 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Back with Travaris Cadet in a moment, the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show. John Murphy and Donald Jones, Travaris Cadet, going to join us momentarily as he is in the building on his way down here to talk. He didn't come here to talk to us in the building today. Probably when he came in for treatment, maybe a little brush-up work on the playbook.
Just the like old Kelvin playbook?
Benjamin. Yeah.
Don't kid yourself. He did come in here to speak to us. It's on the contract, I'm telling you.
Doubt it.
I slid it in the standard NFL contract. You got to do an appearance on the John Murphy Show.
Well, there's a couple of veterans who need that in their contract as well.
Man.
You know who I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Hey, let's hear
about this.
Defense. What's going on with the Buffalo defense? Give us a call, 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-550-2550, or via Twitter at John Murphy Show. That's our Twitter poll. Who's the defensive most valuable player for the Bills through the first half of the season? You can vote on our Twitter poll, and the voting is pretty lopsided, and I think, you know, I have to agree with it, although, you know, it's worth discussing some of the others, but two-thirds of you, 66% on Twitter, say it's Micah Hyde, the Bills' defensive MVP this year. 19% say the rookie corner, Tre'Davious White. 13% say the other safety, Jordan Poyer. And 2% have somebody else in mind. You know what's interesting, Donald?
What's that?
The three, we offered three defensive backs. But on a defense that is not doing a great job defending the pass, they're 26th in the NFL in pass defense, those are the three standouts. I think it's a function of takeaways again.
It is.
We all know Micah Hyde with his picks. Jordan Poyer had some impact plays. Tre'Davious White certainly has had big impact plays. You know what I'm saying?
That's exactly what it is.
It's the takeaways, which is why those are the standouts on this defense.
I think the defensive backs, I mean, they for the most part, they've been very good against the run until last week. But I think the defensive backs have truly done a good job of masking everything for this defense.
Yeah.
It's been – really, those three. I mean, E.J. Gaines has played well as well. He's been in and out of the lineup. So
right.
He and Sharice Wright together have been in this bunch. But, you know, these three guys right here have done a very good job of masking with turnovers.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, it's one thing to it's one thing to get those turnovers. It's another thing when you're getting them in bunches like they were, you know. And so I think they've truly done a good job of masking everything. But I think the defense overall still needs to get a lot better.
Yeah, I agree. All right, so we're going to talk about defense as the afternoon rolls along, but we'll take a little break here and talk a little offense with the newest member of the Buffalo Bills, our first time meeting him. He joins us in studio, running back Travaris Cadet. Just signed to the roster last Saturday, Sunday. When was it, Travaris, last Saturday?
I want to say
Friday after the game.
Yeah, Friday.
It was over the weekend. I knew that. Yes, welcome. Sir. Thanks for coming by.
Appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
You joined the Bills a couple of weeks after being released by the Jets, right?
Yes, sir.
What'd you do in those few weeks?
Well, week one, I was on the street. The Saints let me go, I'll say the last preseason game. I fractured my ribs. And I had a chance to rehab, and then I went to the Jets. Actually, I had relations with them in the off season. I went up doing a visit. I almost signed there before I actually made my decision to come back to New Orleans. So pretty much during my time off, I just trained hard and stayed ready.
What was it like living in Jersey? Ain't that like the best state in the country, man?
I don't know about it's the best state. I don't know about it's the best state in the country.
I'm from Jersey. I just try to throw that in there every now and then.
Yeah, it's cool. It's cold.
Cold.
I mean, it's a football atmosphere, I can tell you that. It's busy. I know New York is right there. Yeah, so, yeah. I mean, a lot of traffic, a lot of people, a lot going on.
Well, you came from what many people consider a pretty good state and a pretty good football state, Florida, South Florida, right?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Dade County. And you went to Miami Central, which is kind of, I'm not saying it's a football factory, but a lot of good players have come out of there, right?
Yes, sir. We have a great football tradition, great coaches. And Miami as a whole, I would say as a little kid growing up, you know, we kind of breed football players. The sport is taken seriously very young. And, you know, that's our way out, you know, to a better place in our lives. You know, football is all we had to kind of, you know, our branch to leave Miami with a great cause and coming back with a great cause. I mean, motivating the kids in the city to be able to go and accomplish their dream.
You know, it's always interesting to me. I know a lot of players from Florida, a lot of people from Florida now, as I play football through my years, and I know a lot of players from all throughout the state, you know, and everybody's like, oh man, we got the best football in Tampa, we got the best football in Lauderdale, Miami, you know. So you guys from Miami, though, you know, traditionally have had a lot of talent come out of Miami, but you're very prideful about Dade County.
Most definitely, I can remember. I mean, it's just that mentality that we carry, you know. We feel like we the best in the state, and not just the state, but the world. I mean, it's a respect thing, you know. It's just, man, from young. I mean, I'm pretty sure y'all saw the U documentary. Mm-hmm. You know, you from young to older, you know, the sport is taken so seriously. And, like, even in between, like, the different parks, like Little League, where, like Liberty City, you got Gwen Cherry, you got Northwest Boys Club, you got Overtown. Like, we compete to be the king of the city. And, you know, that leads to – one thing leads to another, and then you see a couple of guys arguing in a circle about, well, we better than you, you know, just competition. But
sure,
far as, like, another state coming in, trying to compete with us, we don't think they have a chance.
Bills running back Travaris Cadet in studio with us. At Miami Central, you were a quarterback, and a good one, one of the best high school quarterbacks in the country, really, right?
Yes, sir.
Who did you – was there someone you patterned yourself after? Because you were a kind of a dual-threat running passing quarterback, right?
Man, Michael Vick.
Yeah, I knew
I
you
mean,
say.
I was a Michael Vick fanatic.
He was just on the show about 2 weeks ago.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, sitting right here, yeah.
I mean, I was a big Michael Vick fan. I mean, I was left-handed, you know, you scramble. But it seemed like back in those days, if you were left-handed – and you wore the 7, they compared you to Vic. But when I was young, playing park ball, guys compared me to Vic when I didn't know who he was.
Okay.
Then I kind of, like, figured out, like, wow, this guy's pretty dynamic. He's changing games, like, every Sunday. And then I would go back and watch his clips at Virginia Tech. And he was doing pretty much the same thing. He was phenomenal. So, really, like, I really looked up to him. Like, every clip I can watch Michael Vick, I watched.
You committed to Toledo, right, in the Mid-American mm-hmm. Conference?
I committed to University of Minnesota.
Oh, really?
Yes, and then I inked with Toledo.
Okay. And what did you play at Toledo, or you were out of there quickly, right? And you had to go
I
to
JUCO? I redshirted. What led me going to Toledo was my running back, Gordon Warner, and I had a homeboy, Kenneth Spigner, that we actually played at Northwest Boys Club in Miami.
Okay.
And we had played together since we were young. And, you know, we decided that we wanted to go to college together. But, of course, every college that was offering me wasn't offering them. And the colleges that was offering them weren't offering me. So my coach, Daryl Heidelberg, who's now the head coach at Miami New Orleans, he actually, his offensive coordinator, John Shannon, who coached him at Jackson State, was currently at Toledo.
Okay.
So that's how that came about. And, you know, we was like, man, we could go up here and build a powerhouse with the mentality that we had leaving from Miami. At the time, you know, that's the time in your life where you got the most confidence. You feel like you're invincible and you can go change pretty much anything, any situation. So we put our minds together and we went up there, man. You know, pretty much my heart wasn't there. You know, I kind of went there for them. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But, you know, I worked hard, stayed disciplined, didn't complain. You know, the coaches never knew I wanted to leave. But I knew before I even went to Toledo that I wanted to leave.
And you left there, you had to do JUCO, and then wound up at Appalachian State, right?
Yes, sir. I went to Pearl River Community College.
Okay.
Yeah.
Where is it?
Pearl River Community College. It's actually right down the street from New Orleans.
Okay.
So New Orleans was always the airport you would fly into to get there. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like, you know, when that came around, it was like, well, I'm familiar with this territory.
Now, what was that, a new school, a new JUCO?
No, it's been around. Actually, they have a winning tradition. It was led by Tim Hatton. I think they won 04 and 05 or something like that.
And what was it like in JUCO? What was it like to have to transfer? Now, I went to JUCO first.
Right.
And then went to my school. I ended up going to Youngstown.
Right. Youngstown State.
Yeah, exactly. But you went to Toledo and then had to transfer down. What was that like?
I mean, if I didn't transfer down to Toledo, I wouldn't be here right now. I wouldn't be in the league because that was a time that I was able to mature more and more as a man and think about some of the small things I was doing wrong in my life in order to make that transition. Because coming out of high school, you couldn't tell me I wasn't finna do 3 years and out. You know what I mean? I wanted to be in the NFL like Michael Vick at 20.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I wanted to have that success young. But, you know, every man's path is not the same. So, actually, my junior college coach benched me. That really opened my eyes. Because now I'm on a lower level. You know, you go to a lower level, you're expecting to start.
Oh, yeah.
I go to JUCO. I was playing quarterback at the time. You know, Tim Haddon benched me, moved me to receiver. And then I was kind of like in a rotation, but I didn't have the success I planned on having.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, you know, in Mississippi, like, during the weekends, everybody go home who go JUCO. And mostly the school is predominantly, like, people from Mississippi.
Yeah.
We only had, like, maybe 10 out-of-staters
or
something like that. So we're battling each other for those 8 spots on the roster. And, like, on a weekend, I didn't have a car. I didn't have no money. You know, I was pretty much broke. So every time I got bored, I just wanted to go work out. So I was just carving and carving, really perfecting my craft, like just out there on the weekends in the middle of nowhere by myself. You know, you're in the country, so it's not very many stores around.
Mm-hmm.
So the only thing you could do is think about life, what you're doing wrong, how you can correct it, and really going out on the field every day perfecting your craft. Because that's the only thing that would delete time. Because all of you is just going to sit in the room all day and just pass out.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So during those times, and then I was dealing with adversity. Like, my JUCO coach, it came to a point, he's going to send me home. Like, I was going to make the top 8. So, I mean, I had that to work out, and then I had that pressure pushing me. And then he had a vision for me to come back because I was young, because I was trying to do 1 year and get out.
Yeah.
His vision for me was to do 2 years, you know, and then transfer. But pretty much I was like, nah, I'm pretty much going to try to leave if I can. And leaving JUCO, I only had one offer. I went to Kansas State. Kansas State told me they wouldn't offer me before I came. So really I had one offer, and that was Appalachian State. And it was the perfect fit. Back then I didn't know it. I know it was a great program, but pretty much that prevailed me. And then meeting Jerry Moore at App State really lifted my game to another level.
When did you stop being a quarterback and start being a running back, receiver, everything else?
Well, in junior college, Tim Hatton moved me to receiver.
Yeah. Okay.
When I got to Appalachian State, I was asked to be kind of like an athlete.
Yeah.
Played numerous positions. Armani Edwards, he cut his foot mowing his lawn. And I was asked to move back to quarterback. So me and DeAndre Presley actually battled it out. And they gave the nod to him. But then against East Carolina, I come in the middle of the game, bring us back. And then I finished. But then Armani Edwards was coming back the next week. So he came back and he was starting. Then he kind of like just had me all over the place, just trying to get me the ball in certain situations. My junior year, and I played punt return that year. My junior year, we were in camp. I was starting at slot. Ended up breaking my thumb, so I couldn't catch the ball. All our running backs, Devin Moore, Cedric Baker, all those guys, Rod Chisholm, all of them had concussions. Well, Devin Moore tore his quad, and the other two had concussions. And our running back coach, Coach Moore, Lil Mo, he was like, "Can you play running back?" I was like, "Yeah, I can do it." And I go out that run for 150 yards, and it was all she wrote.
What are you now? Seriously, I don't know. You've caught more passes, right? You've caught more passes than actual carries as a running back in the league, right?
I mean, coming into the league, you know, having interviews with different teams, they view me different. My coach Mike Kent and Kareem Young, they both told me, like, well, most teams looking at you as a slot receiver. You know, I met with some teams, they said, no, you're a running back, right? So it's kind of like, well, I mean, where do I fit in? I don't know what I'm going to be, right? But Coach Kent always told me more on the receiver side. So I was like, well, is there any offenses in the league that I can look at that's similar to what we have at App State? Because, you know, a lot of people would transition the college offenses over to the league anyway. And I never really thought of New Orleans, but they was the perfect fit, right? But, of course, it's a draft board. You have no control over where you go.
Yeah.
So I was like, you know what, during my time, when I was training in Atlanta with Chip Smith, I was kind of like just pretty much working out at running back and working out at receiver, just trying to make sure I'm ready for both, which I had really done that throughout my college career. And you know, I didn't get drafted. Actually, Buffalo called me, I believe, in the 7th round. Miami did, I think, the 5th through the 6th or whatnot. And, you know, pretty much I had met with the Saints at the Battle of Florida game, probably like 1 a.m. in the morning. And they was like, you know, we like you. You know, we don't have many picks. You know, we're faced with some adversity off the field. I mean, on the field, which turned into off the field. I mean, you know, the penalty they had with the bounty and everything. And I never knew that was going to be the team I was going to be signing with. So after the draft, that was the first team that called me.
And you spent some good time there, put up some good numbers. What do you think they have in mind for you here with the Buffalo Bills in terms of position or role that you might play?
Right now I'm just trying to get the playbook down. But I think they're going to use me similar to the way I was used in New Orleans. It could be different. You know what I mean? I mean, in New Orleans, I didn't really run the ball that much. I felt I could have more. But I was really used in the passing game, and that's what the league kind of labeled me as.
Yeah, so, like as a third down back, slot, or what do you think?
I mean, for the most part, I say a third down back, a slot. I mean, my rookie year in New Orleans, they moved me to receiver full time, you know, and actually I had came back to running back in that role, that kind of like that hybrid role when Sproles broke his arm, broke his hand. So they could always view me as mostly a receiver. Like in New Orleans, even though I ran the ball, I didn't run the ball that much, but I pretty much did both, mostly on the receiving end.
Like, I can see why coaches might want to have a guy like you around, you know, because of your versatility. We can do a lot of different things with this guy, you would think.
Yeah, I mean, week to week in New Orleans, like with Coach Payton, he's very creative. You know, I pretty much can strike from anywhere. You know, one week I'd be playing outside, slot. You know, I'd be more in the backfield. You know, had different specialty plays or whatnot, but it was exciting to see week to week what he had in mind. But
you feel like moving around so much, playing in the slot, then going in the backfield, then playing outside, you never really had a chance to really perfect one position?
Right.
You feel that way?
I feel that way in a sense, but, you know, one thing I've learned in this league is you got to understand who you are.
Yeah.
And what you do well and what you don't do well. And I'm a guy that kind of looks at things from a depth, you know, from a depth perspective and just seeing what's kept me around and what's going to keep me around and what I'm good at and what I'm not good at. My weaknesses is for me to go work on in the offseason. So when a coach looks at me as a player and say, well, we want to put him in this area, you know, so he can succeed and help the team in this way. And then maybe a play or two, I may get caught up on a play he really don't want me in on, and I have some production. He may say, oh, well, maybe he can do this well as well. Right. So,
hey, after we got to let you go, but after all that time with the Saints that you spent in your career, and they're coming up here, of course, Sunday, how do you think they'll fare in 40-degree temperature? Are they still a dome team that thrives in the dome, or can they handle cold and a little bit of rain here this Sunday?
It's going to be a test, definitely going to be a test for them. When I think back, I think, you know, back in New Orleans, at times we've handled outside games well and sometimes they didn't. I mean, we didn't. So it's definitely going to be a test. You know, being that precipitation is definitely a factor this week. So, I mean, they're going to have to get ready for it and, we'll see what happens.
I hope so. I hope we'll see what happens. Hey, thanks for coming by. We know you've had a busy couple of days. Thanks for spending a few minutes with us.
Yes, sir. Appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Tavares Cadet, Bills running back, joining us in studio. Donald and I back with more. John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts, from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
We are back. John Murphy and Donald Jones coming to you live from One Bills Drive. Steve Tasker standing in the wings waiting to join us in a moment or two. Our thanks to Cadet. Doesn't want to be called Tavares.
Hey, you call a man by what he asked you to
he
call
him. He says Cadet. It's like people call me Murphy.
You rather be Murph?
I don't care. I don't care what they call him.
Because you call your kids by the full name.
Yes, the entire Jack Murphy. Only because I know other Jacks. I know other Marks. I work closely with another Mark.
What if they said to you, Dad, just call me Jack?
They wouldn't speak to me like that. at this point, Donald, and they're young men. I mean, they kind of accept their fate. They are what they are.
Okay.
They've been named already, and everybody's comfortable with it. So it's not a big deal. I know you guys get a big kick out of it.
I do.
I'll say, hey, I got to call Jack Murphy and ask him something. And you're like, why do you say his full name? Because I know a couple of other Jacks. Or I got to call Mark Murphy and say this.
So I call my father, right? And, he'll call me. And he's like, what's up, money? That's what he calls
money,
me. What's up, money? So I'll call him, what's up, money? And he'll be like, you call me daddy. I'm like, man, chill out. Yo. I'm not calling you daddy. What are you talking
about?
You're
a little old to call anybody daddy. Don't call me daddy.
No, that's never going to happen.
Let's take a call from Tom in West Seneca. Hello, Tom. Welcome to the show. Do you have thoughts on who the defensive MVP might be for the Bills at midseason? What do you think?
Yes, John. Don, thanks for having me.
Sure.
I looked at the Twitter poll, and I'm a softie. I see where Hyde, White, and Poyer, they all did some really good things this year on the field. And that being said, I've got to say that I like them all. I like those three guys right there for MVP. But too bad they can't have one for each of them. But, and also I'd like to mention about Tyrod Taylor's play on Sunday, that he couldn't do nothing because that offensive line was tired. That was obvious. And the defensive line clearly was tired. But things will change this week. They're well rested, and I expect big things out of Tyrod and his offensive people.
Thank you very much, Tom. You know, it's funny, Donald, everybody that I've talked to about Richie Incognito's little mild outburst in the locker room last Thursday night when he got a little exercised about Thursday Night Football, how unfair it was, how it was baloney, et cetera. Almost everybody I've talked to says the same thing. I agree with Richie, but that's not the right place for it. And I agree with him too. Thursday Night Football is a disservice to players, and was that why the Bills lost? No, the Jets had the same time frame, but you certainly can't expect to get good games on a regular basis on Thursday Night Football, and you normally don't.
You know, it's crazy because I can see it from both sides, right? I've been a player. I know what it's like to play on Thursday night. It's tough to do, you know, because you're still sore from the game before. And then for the Bills, they had to travel. They had to fly, you know, and that's not really good for your body either. And so everything that you're used to doing, we hear guys like Lorenzo come on the show and tell us about his routine.
Mm-hmm.
All of that is out the window, you know, because there is no routine right now. It's totally different. You're trying to learn whatever it is that you're going to do in the game, and you're trying to rehab your body as fast as you can so that you can get back for that Thursday night game. I get it. But at the same time, the Jets had to go through the same exact thing. The only thing they didn't have to do was travel, you know? And
it's a short trip for Buffalo.
Right. It's a short trip.
As short as it gets.
Right. It doesn't get any shorter than that. 45 minutes was the flight, something like that, you know? So, you know, the fact of the matter was that the Bills came out flat, you know, and the Jets came out ready to play. They were ready to go at home, and they just took it to the Bills, you know. And the fortunate thing is you don't have any Thursday night games the rest of the season. So there's no more excuses for that. You got to come out this week and play. Now you had 10 days, you know, so there's really no excuse this week when you have 10 days to really prepare for a Saints team, and they only have a week.
All right. Hey, we're focused on the Bills' defense at midseason. What do you think? How have they performed? And who's the defensive most valuable player 8 games in? That's our Twitter poll. Most of you on Twitter believe that the most valuable player on defense so far is Micah Hyde, 69%. 16% say the rookie Tre'Davious White. 13% say Jordan Poyer. What do you think? Give us a call, 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. We'll get Steve Tasker's thoughts on this when we return. The Bills Wall of Famer from the NFL on CBS standing by to join us for the next couple of minutes or so. So give us a ring. Steve Tasker coming up next. The John Murphy Show presented by Napa Auto Parts from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
Radio Network Sports Update.
Players' day off here at One Bills Drive. They return tomorrow to practice, get ready for the New Orleans Saints with a 6-game win streak that they're bringing to Orchard Park. Second-ranked offensive attack in the NFL. Going to be a challenge for a Buffalo defense that has dropped to 22nd in the league, worse than last year's ranking at the end of the year. Buffalo still waiting to see whether rookie wideout Zay Jones can return to the lineup with a knee he injured last Thursday against the Jets. Tight end Charles Clay, cornerback E.J. Gaines also day-to-day. Bills should have a better idea tomorrow as to what their status might be for the week. Bills, Saints, Sunday, 1 p.m. The early forecast calls for cloudy skies, slight chance of rain, and a high of just 43 degrees on Sunday. NFL suspended Tampa Bay Bucks wide receiver Mike Evans for 1 game for his blindside hit on New Orleans Saints cornerback Marshon Lattimore over the weekend on Sunday. That led to a sideline scuffle. Evans will appeal the suspension, according to ESPN. Bengals wide receiver A.J. Green and Jaguars cornerback Jalen Ramsey will not be suspended for their fight in Sunday's game, according to the league. Both players will face potential fines. San Francisco 49ers, a week after they traded for Jimmy Garoppolo, have decided that he still belongs on the bench as he goes into his second week. It doesn't look like he'll be in the lineup for the Niners this week. Kyle Shanahan has maintained that the decision on when to play Garoppolo will be a week-to-week proposition. And he said Monday the early plan for this week is for Garoppolo to serve as a backup to C.J. Beathard. Green Bay Packers are worried about the condition of right tackle Brian Bulaga, who injured his knee in last night's 30-17 loss to the Lions, believed to be a significant injury for Bulaga and his knee. He's 28 years old. He missed the entire 2013 season with a torn ACL. And the Buffalo Sabres at home tonight against the Washington Capitals, who are coming off an overtime win last night over Arizona. Face-off just after 7 o'clock, the game on NBCSN. It looks like Nicholas Batiste could make his season debut for the Sabres tonight. Rasmus Ristolainen remains day-to-day with an upper body injury. Sabres and Caps, 7 o'clock tonight at the KeyBank Center. We're coming to you live from One Bills Drive in our One Buffalo studio. John Murphy, Donald Jones, Hour 2 of the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts, with Donald's Nuts and Bolts, presented by Napa, coming up at the bottom of the hour. But joining us right now at the top of the hour, our good buddy Steve Tasker from the NFL on CBS, Bills Wall of Famer. Steve, thanks for coming by.
Well, thanks for having me again. It's nice to be back.
Got good reviews from your fill-in performance with Donald last week when I was down.
Who gave you the reviews? That's what I want to know. Because I get the spectrum, good and bad. I get the good ones and the bad ones.
Thanks for doing that. We were all set up last week. You did the show Wednesday and Thursday, and I think optimism was peaking right around then.
Man. I was stoked after that.
Everybody
show.
Was.
After sitting there with Donald for 2 days, man, I was really stoked for that Thursday night game. And, I'm like everybody else. You come away disappointed and trying to figure out. And you try not to go back the other way and think, oh, my gosh, we were all fooled into thinking this team was any good. It's not quite that bad.
No.
I think it's – even after that weekend, there was only three teams in the conference that had a better record, and only three teams, if they all won, would tie you.
Yeah.
So the Bills are still sitting very well. But, you know, it's kind of like this – the way I saw it, this second half of the season – kind of sets up the way we thought the first half set up. I mean, we thought we were going to, you know, Denver and Atlanta, those teams looked formidable. Yep. Cincinnati, you know, Carolina, all those teams were going to plow through here, and it was going to be a really tough stretch to beat any of them. And the Bills won 5 of those games. It's a pretty good stretch. But now the second half is the one that really, you know, it's the same. You know, you think like, wow, these games are really tough.
Look, these next 4 games are the games that set up December. You want to have meaningful games in Buffalo in December? You want to make a race for the playoffs these next 4 games starting Sunday. I don't care if it's an NFC opponent.
Yeah.
You know, it's a big game.
Yeah. That's the way we used to do it when I was in the league. We'd break the season down into 4 sections, 4 games. Mm-hmm. And you come away 2-2 in one part of them, 3-1 in the other, and you're 5-3 headed in. And you know, you got to do the same thing these next four games with New Orleans, the Chargers, the Chiefs, and the Patriots. That's a pretty good stretch of football there. If you come out of that even, you got to think you're doing pretty well.
Your CBS colleague, we talked to him last week in the Meadowlands, Steve, Jim Nance, and he remarked on the unusual nature of the Bills' schedule. You know, to have that schedule backloaded with the Dolphins and Patriots at the end. To me, if you can hang in over these next 4 weeks, I think I'm saying the same thing you did, Donald, you know, sets up December. If you can hang in over the next 4 weeks, then you can make a difference playing the Dolphins twice and the Patriots in the last 5 weeks.
Absolutely. I mean, those games are crucial. They're worth two games. You knock those other guys off and you get a chance to play.
Right.
But by the same token, you got to stay healthy enough to get there. You got to keep yourself in the hunt until you get there. And you got to play well when you do get there because those games are doubly important. There's a lot of things that go into it, no question. But you do leave that door open for success or failure until the very end of the season, which in years past is probably a good thing because we were just hoping to kind of hang in there, you know. But this is a season where, you know, if you equate it to a goal, you're kind of saving a score here. You got a 5-3 thing going into the back nine. You kind of want to, you know, you want to keep on keeping on and hang a score up there. Try and get 10 wins and get in the
exactly.
tournament.
Exactly.
I want to ask you guys, both former players, this. Part of the reason why people were down about the game last Thursday was the fact that it was nationally televised, and the Bills are only going to get right now that one crack at national TV. Does that matter to players, you know, falling flat on national TV? Does it matter to them, do you think? Is there a hangover effect after that?
I don't think it's going to be a hangover effect. You know, you're going to be 10 days out. I expect them to come out at home and play totally different than they did. I don't care who they're playing, but you want to play well on national TV. You never get a chance to have so many people watching you play as a team and individually. You know, to have your whole. I mean, there's a lot more technology now where everybody you can see games across the country
right.
now with all types of stuff. But you don't get a chance where everybody can see you play. You know, it's a total different feeling. And when you come out and play the way they did, it's like, oh, man, that's a total letdown, you know, individually and as a team.
Yeah, I agree. It does. It means the same. Every game, every loss is rough, or particularly, even if you know, a loss like that hurts all the time and it means the same. But it means just as much in a different way because now all your friends and stuff who see you, now they have to stick up for you to their friends because their
right.
friends saw you. You know?
Right.
And so it cuts a wide swath through the people who know you and love you and
yeah.
who take an interest in you because now they have to deal with with it. Just
they
like
go back to work,
yeah.
you know, because
they
got to
go back to
you're
work.
Talking trash
yeah,
at
yeah.
work, like, yeah, my boy's playing tonight and all this stuff.
Yeah.
He's going to kill the Jets, you know. Especially for me, back home in New Jersey, you know, a lot of Jets fans, you know. So it was like I was getting text messages like I was playing out there on the field,
yeah.
and I'm like, dude, I'm not a player right now. I'm telling you,
it's true.
You know, so it's like everybody's
your phone
watching.
Blows up.
It's It's tough when you lose one like the way they did that last week.
Steve Tasker in studio with us. Steve, want to get you engaged on kind of a midseason evaluation of where the Bills are at. Our Twitter poll today deals with that, and it deals with the defensive side of the ball. We did offense yesterday. Yesterday on Twitter, the respondent said Tyrod Taylor was the offensive MVP, defensive MVP, midseason defensive MVP for the Buffalo Bills. And we put it up on Twitter. And right now, Micah Hyde is the overwhelming choice of Twitter respondents with 69% of the votes with about 1,100 votes in. 16% say the rookie Tre'Davious White. 12% say Jordan Poyer. 3% say somebody else. Three members of the Bills' secondary. And that's the names we put up there, but they really are the logical choices. A secondary that has not played, you know, statistically that well.
Well, they're getting turnovers,
right.
and they're getting some surprising play, particularly from Tre'Davious. Micah Hyde was supposed to play well.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's telling that even when you put the, you know, obviously we pick those names, but, you know, that front seven, you know, they're not getting much pressure. They don't have anybody that's got like 7 or 8 sacks at the midpoint. They don't have a guy that's getting on a double-digit sack tear. That hasn't been the focal point of the defense. It's been the turnovers and the forced fumbles and the picks in the back end. So I think it tells you something about this defense that, you know, it's guys in the secondary that you're looking at as the MVP. And I agree, Micah Hyde is the guy for the entire defense. Although there's, you know, obviously he's not the only guy playing well. He's the guy that's been probably started the season with more pressure because of the free agent contract he signed than anybody else. And he's answered those questions extremely well, I think. He's played solid. He's been in the right spot. Got a lot of turnovers, and that's the one splash statistic you can't make go away.
I think it's been because Jordan kind of quiet as well. Because Jordan Poyer came out from the beginning of the season, he was balling, you know, and everybody was talking about Jordan Poyer. nobody was really talking about Micah Hyde, you know. And then all of a sudden, he's second in the league in interceptions, you know, and it's been kind of quiet, you know. But he is the one that's been the most consistent player out there on the field, being consistent in the spots where he's supposed to be. You want to call it luck? Nah, he's where he's supposed to be, and the ball is falling in his hands, you know. He's making tackles. And my biggest thing is he is the quarterback of the back end of the defense. You know, he is the free. He is the guy who has to make sure that everybody is lined up where they're supposed to. And that's important, you know, to line everybody else up and for you to be lined up the right and be in the right spots and making plays yourself. So, for me, I think, you know, just like yesterday, Tyrod we had as the MVP, I think Micah, being the quarterback of the back end, is the MVP.
We're taking your phone calls. If you have a question or a comment for Steve while he's with us the next couple of minutes, 803-0550 is the number. From our outside Buffalo, toll-free at 1-888-550-2550. Tom from the West Side is on the line with us. Hello, Tom. Go ahead.
West Side. Yeah. Listen, I'm wondering how much thought Sean McDermott puts into bringing somebody in. For somebody we're going to play this week or next week, just so they get barnstormed, try and get some secrets from the other team, because it seems like he's been doing it all year long, and then a week or two later, or even right after the game, they release him.
Hmm. So you're thinking of Cadet, who played was in preseason.
Next one on all that.
Yeah, with the Saints.
Been long.
Now, he hasn't been there since preseason.
About Cadet. I think Cadet is a good player. You know, he's kind of bounced around a little bit, but I think he's a good player. He's a running back that they need, you know, quite honestly. I mean, they haven't really been able to get LeSean McCoy going. Mike Tolbert hasn't really gotten going. They need somebody that can come in and do multiple things for them, you know, and I think Cadet is that player. So I hope that he can come out and maybe get some carries and maybe stick around and not just release him because – you know, you brought him in because they're playing the Saints.
Yeah, I mean, don't be fooled by that. No question, Tom, that is probably a little bit of a coincidence. Maybe some thought goes into it. It goes back years and years in the NFL history where coaches and players would do that. It's a little more common now to get players because of the practice squad and their ability to hang on to players, and then other teams sign them off your practice squad. This happens more and more. I don't think there's a concerted effort to bring the guy in and sit him in front of a bright light and say, okay, what do you know about their offense?
Spill it.
Yeah, I don't think there's any of that. But, even back in the day when I was playing back in the mid-'80s, I remember standing around a locker room with the Houston Oilers, and this came up somehow, some way with another team, and it happened. It wasn't that common then because no free agency, right. No practice squad, all that. And they were like, well, what happens when you go to – and they all agreed, hey, you tell them everything.
Really?
Yeah.
You tell them everything you can think of. They're the ones paying the check.
What are you telling them?
Whatever they ask, if you can chip in, if they ask you. Now, here's the thing, too, that a lot of people don't get. Like me as an analyst, I go into these production meetings with Bill Belichick, with Sean McDermott, with Todd Bowles, with, you know, you name the head coach, Adam Gase, all these guys, even back in the day, Jeff Fisher. I sat down with all of these guys, and he's talked to both head coaches. I would be shocked, and people worry about this because they worry about, hey, don't tell those announcers anything because they may tell, you know, well, the job one for us is not to do anything to upset the competitive balance. Right. We're not going to ask Sean McDermott a question based on what Bill Belichick told us about his team.
Right.
You just don't do that.
It's say, what
right. It's unethical and it's wrong. Yeah. So you don't do that. That's job one, really. Yeah. The thing about it is I would be absolutely shocked if there was a head coach who didn't know enough about the opposing opponent that he would sit down and say, what do you think about, what do you think they're going to do here? What do you think they're going to do with this player? They ain't asking me. Those guys watch film. Mm-hmm. They know what they're going to do.
Printouts of 10
they know. They got spreadsheets. They've got statistics. They got analytics. They got film study. They got anecdotal evidence. They got coaches who coached with some of those guys. They've got decades of film archives about that coach and how he coordinates. You don't think Wade Phillips has got like 30 years of film on his defenses. They know exactly what Wade's going to do.
So what can you get from a guy who switches teams?
Don't get anything. Tactic, not X's and O's. You don't get that. He's in here because he's a player. And you can tell by when you talk to him, I mean, he's the road he's traveled, when you start talking to him and talk about these guys and why they went here and what happened to their story, you know they've put a lot of thought into it. And, you know, they've got some self-awareness. You know, they're at a level that – in their life where they can help an NFL team. They've got enough experience. They've got enough ability. They've been around the block, and they know how to be a pro. And that's why a kid like Cadet is in here. He can offer something.
Mm-hmm. You heard some of that interview with Cadet.
Yeah, I did. I listened to it.
You know what
yeah.
stuck with me, Donald, when he, and Steve, when he said, I've been in the league long enough, what did he say, 6 years, that I know what did he say? I know what my role is, kind of. Or yeah. I know what I can do for this team this year.
Yeah.
And if it's an expanded role, I'll worry about that in the offseason. I thought that was – you just said self-awareness. That's what that was, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's
one-on-one in the league. Yeah. You know? I mean, you know some your guys, role on a team.
Some guys never get that. And they don't last. That's, you know, they don't get it. They don't have a level of, you know, being able to look at themselves as somebody else sees them. They only see, you know, we all spin it positive in our own favor,
right,
with your position on the team and where you fall in the pecking order of the receiving right. core, right, Donald, exactly. and the running backs and all that. And some guys can't see it. They're the fifth guy hanging on by a thread, and they don't know why they're not starting.
Mm-hmm.
They just don't get that. You know, whether it's Shady McCoy up there starting, they go, oh, man, I don't know. I could do that.
Literally,
there's guys who tell it, particularly in training camp, when you get the young kids coming in, you know, they had their high school jersey retired. They don't know that every other guy did, too. You know, all of that. Man, they just don't know.
No, but it's the truth.
It's true. It's true.
You know, you got to understand your role on the team and perfect that. And if you get your shot to be LeSean McCoy, like LeSean McCoy got his shot when Brian Westbrook was there, if you get that shot, then you take the most – you make the most of that opportunity. Yeah. But as in the meantime, in between time, if you're a special teams guy, make the Pro Bowl on special teams.
Yeah.
So you can stick around until you get your shot.
Well, that's the thing. That's the thing. The guys who are smart go, what do I have to do to make sure
right.
I am here on the final cuts and they cannot get rid of for whatever, mm-hmm. whatever I have to do, whether I'm doing laundry, or whether I'm holding the chains in practice, whether I'm holding the script in practice and signaling the plays in, whatever I do, mm-hmm. I got to make sure I'm here, and whatever they ask me to do, I'm going to exceed expectations.
We're with Steve Tasker, Bills Wall of Famer from the NFL on CBS, talking about the Bills, focusing on the defense, but focusing on the Bills at midseason. You're welcome to join us at 803-0550 and toll free 1-888-552-550. Donald and I talked about this yesterday, Steve. When you look at the big picture AFC, there's a long way to go. You mentioned it right off the bat of the tough games that await the Buffalo Bills. But if you look at where they sit in playoff positioning, they're the sixth seed now in as a wild card. The teams below them, you would think they're immediate threats to overtake the Bills. Anybody there scare you? Miami, Baltimore, Oakland, the Jets? I mean, can you name one of those four and say, boy, that's a team that could get hot and zip by?
Yeah,
Bills have to take care of their own business
right.
first.
Well, Miami is a guy. They got two games against Miami. The Buffalo Bills beat Oakland. They split with the Jets. I think Oakland has better football to play, but I think Oakland is right now is really the one I don't know enough about to make a thing is Miami. It seems to me Miami
get shut out 40-0
yeah,
a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, I mean, you're
by
right.
Baltimore.
You're right, but it's not so much. It is about those teams that you're talking about: Miami, Oakland, the Jets, and Baltimore. But it's also about their schedule. You know, they've got it.
Who
they're playing? Yep. Are they going to get healthy? Now it seems to me, and even we talked about it last week when you were in Jersey and off and on about the Bills starting to get healthier again. You mm-hmm. know, instead of week to week, Charles Clay is day to day.
Right.
You know, same thing with Poyer. He may get back on the field.
Benjamin.
Right. But the simple fact of the matter is your defense is ranked 22nd in the league, and you're going against Drew Brees this week. And then you're going against Kansas City. Yeah, that's – you got to strap it on. I mean, you got to strap it on and start doing all the extra things, and you better hope your process works.
Right.
You know, it's really – that's what it comes down to. You got to take care of your business, get all those other teams. You're going to see the Dolphins soon enough.
Mm-hmm. As we assess the Bills at midseason, Steve, I think it's important to make this note too. This clearly is Sean McDermott and Brandon Bean's team, and they set about putting their imprint on the team, you know, back in August in preseason with the Watkins trade, the Darby trade, and you think, wow, those are two big moves, pretty bold moves. They weren't done there. You know what I mean? They traded away Darius. They acquired Kelvin Benjamin. I think it's pretty clear that those two, Bean and McDermott, have really put their stamp on the roster and put their imprint on the type of player they want to get here in Buffalo. That has happened in this first half of the season already, I think.
Yeah, and I think they it's obvious, and you can tell from the team that they put a big emphasis on locker room guys. They want a lot of guys in there who are quality guys, selfless guys, guys who will give it up for the team and who will help others do the same. That has not a new concept. There have been other teams who have done that. Mm-hmm. Generally speaking, when you start doing that, you get a lot of really great guys who cannot play.
Right.
You get great guys. They're a sweetheart of a guy, but he ain't big enough. he ain't fast talent. Enough. He ain't strong enough. He ain't skilled enough. And you got like 20 of them.
Mm-hmm.
Locker room's great. The team parties are awesome. But you can't win.
Mm-hmm.
Kelvin Benjamin doesn't fit into that. He's a legitimate player. He's good. Micah Hyde, legit. Jordan Poyer, legit. So they got some guys that are doing it, but they need, you know, there's going to be a time in this next draft and this next offseason where they've got to continue to upgrade their talent level. Yeah. There's no question they've got the culture they want in place. We've seen signs of it, and we've talked about it before, about how this is a team that is winning games. They're opportunistic. They got to make – plays are being made from guys up and down the roster.
Mm-hmm.
But there's no question you're going to need some great set-apart athletes who can live and thrive in that culture and contribute to it to come in here as well.
One of the things that I spent a lot of time in this little mini by comparing what I thought about the Bills when the season began to where they are now. Back in September 9th, before the season began, I would have told you, well, they're going to be a strong rushing team. You know, they led the league in rushing the last 2 years. Not really at midseason. They've been inconsistent. They've had their moments. Shady's had some great moments, some great runs. But it's a little not alarming, but I'm just scratch my head. Like, what happened to that number one rushing team, and why aren't they as good as they were the last couple of years? What do you think of that?
Yeah, I think it has to do with the shift in philosophy, no question. They started out as a zone read team. They got to the bye week, and they kind of shifted and tweaked some things, and they kind of got better for a minute. And I think now, as you get to that point, you gotta say, okay, what's our running game going to be? What's our go to play? And I think I've always been a fan, and I don't know whether it's me or whether I'm right in saying this or wrong. I have always felt that you need a shortened menu of plays that you can run against anybody at any time.
Mm-hmm.
You got to have a play that you can run now in a pin and run it really well against whatever front they throw at you, whatever. It may look different when it comes off the ball, but it's going to be our play, and the blocking scheme and the path of the running back is going to be dictated by the front and how they block it. I would suspect maybe they don't have that right now because they've kind of vacillated between this zone scheme running thing where one cut
right
back to the power game with mm-hmm. the traps and the cross blocking and that kind of thing. So there's no question they got a little better when they started adjusting it, but I still think they're even at this point it's at week eight, week 10 of the season, 9 of the season. They got some work to do. Yeah. They got some improvements to make.
I think ultimately they just don't have an identity this year as an offense. You know, you can't hang your hat on one thing and say this is what we know they can do, because we've seen them run the zone. It hasn't worked. You'll see it sometimes, you know, go for a big play. Then you see them run the power. It doesn't work. Then you see it, you know, spring for a big play. So it's not like Steve is just talking about. You have, okay, we go power, we know that's going to work. They're not doing that this year. It's not like passing the ball. That's never really – since Tyrod's been here, that's never been
It's not thing. That it doesn't work. Sometimes it's that the defense now doesn't have to invest so much to stop your bread and butter
mm-hmm.
that they're so vulnerable in another place that you can pick them apart. You can hit plays on them. They haven't gotten to that yet.
That identity, I would think, is going to change at least a little bit with the addition of Kelvin Benjamin, right, and with Charles Clay coming off injury, maybe sooner rather than later.
You got to target him. You got to get him the football and put him in and say, listen, throw it to him. And you throw it to him, you know, no matter what kind of thing. You know, he's open when he ain't open. And you got to force the defense to say, okay, we got to cover him up.
All right.
And, both of those guys. We'll see.
I think both of those guys on the field at the same time, I mean, it truly does open things up. If you're doing what you're supposed to do, it will ease things up for a LeSean McCoy where he'll be able to run the ball. But you got to get those guys the ball and just put strike fear into Sean Payton's mind. Like, okay, we got to make sure that we cover up Charles Clay, we cover up Kelvin Benjamin. I think those would be the two guys that they would really focus on. Then all of a sudden you see a guy like, number one, LeSean McCoy go off, or a guy like Jordan Matthews, Zay Jones come open now because those two guys are taking all the double coverages and stuff.
Donald's going to dive into the nuts and bolts of Kelvin Benjamin and what he might mean to this offense in a minute. Let's work in a call here from John in Salamanca. Hello, John. Welcome. You're on the air with us.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. What do you think of this? It's just a theory, but let's say the Bills really like Garoppolo, but New England won't trade him to Buffalo because he's in the division. San Francisco's not playing him, so let's trade our first-round Kansas City draft pick for Garoppolo at the end of the season, even if we have to put the franchise tag on him for 1 year and see what happens, because we're not going to be able to get a really good quarterback, I don't think, in this year's draft. I'm going to hang up and listen to
all
what
right. I don't. Well, John, if you don't think, if John, our caller in Salamanca, doesn't think they're going to get a good quarterback in the draft, San Francisco probably agrees with you. And they don't. Well, so why do they need an extra first-round draft pick when they don't? When they're going to trade away the quarterback they just got? So, I think it's easier to get first-round talent at DB or defensive end or, you know, pass rusher or whatever other position you got than to find a quarterback. And if they think they've got their guy in Garoppolo, which they do. I mean, they're not playing him because they don't want to. He's not ready. They're 0-8. They're not going to throw him in there and have him blow out his shoulder
Garcon
on this team.
Garcon's not in there. I mean,
they're just not a good football team right now. So I think you can probably count on San Francisco being the top pick of the draft anyway. So they're not going to. Yeah, they're not going to make that deal just for the reasons you think Buffalo should make the deal.
One more call while Steve is with us from Mike in North Tonawanda. Go ahead, Mike. Welcome.
Hi. First thing I want to say is, Steve, thank you for everything you ever did for us on the football field. First thing I'd like to say is, Steve, thank you for everything you ever did on the football field. I thought it took a ton of guts to play like you did at your size.
Thanks. I appreciate it.
I hope I get to meet you someday. I remember when they were using you as a wide receiver and you were making an impact on the games in the K-gun, but I love when they had you wham block and nose guards because you were blowing them up, Steve.
Yeah, well.
It was so exciting.
Yeah, it was a fun time. Thanks, I appreciate it.
I feel good that I got to talk to you. Thank you so much.
Thanks for calling in.
Okay, guys, my question is this. What was the strong point of this team last year, the defensive line? Now it's—I'm not going to say it's a weakness, but man, they can't get any pressure. What's happened to Shaq Lawson? Where is he? You never hear his name called. Did he join the witness protection program? We need pressure from these guys. Why aren't they playing Yarborough more often? That guy's a young guy that hustles and makes plays. Last thing to all you guys, if anybody sees Woody, he was my equipment manager in minor league ball. I haven't seen him in a long time. Wow. Tell him Mike Stapleton says hi.
Okay.
And okay.
Did you guys see Woody get crushed on the sidelines the other day?
Did he? I missed it.
Oh, Woody.
Oh.
Listen, he's not a spring chicken either.
No kidding.
Man.
No. I checked with him after the game. I
really?
Said, are you all right? And he said, my back hurts. But he jumped right up.
Did he?
Oh,
he did get right up.
That's
right. You
see
it in his face, though, when he got up.
I got a text from him today. I got to go check on him then.
First of all, you do humility better than anybody I've ever seen. People call
listen,
it.
It's embarrassing.
You do. You're unbelievable.
Listen, I was on a great team. I was a role player. I had the role I had for the reason I had it. I mean, they had two Hall of Famers playing receiver in front of me. I had no business getting on the field in that offense.
Mike in North Tonawanda had the thoughts. And I don't know if the defensive line was that great last year either, by the way. But you'd like to see more. And maybe it's
they got to get some sacks sometime. It's unacceptable not to be forcing the quarterback to make adjustments and getting him off his spot. Some of it is, they seem to go with a four-man rush a lot.
Yeah.
They don't send a lot of exotic stuff, and maybe it's because, well, whatever reason. But defenses in the NFL, they always say run and stop the run. Well, listen, if you can't stop the run, you don't have to even play defense. I mean, you may as well just walk off the field. That's a given. The defenses in the NFL to this day, in this day and age, at this point in history, are about two things: getting after the passer and getting turnovers. Now, the Bills have gotten turnovers, but they cannot get after the passer. And it's a throwing league. You got to do those two things. And I think, Mike, the caller's right. It's a signal of something deeper that they need to fix.
I don't see it this week, though. Drew Brees gets the ball out fast. I don't see them getting to him this week.
Yep. But you would like to have the ball come – the faster the ball gets out, the shorter the pass is going to be.
Mm-hmm.
And the more opportunity there is to jump routes. So I think, for me, I like pressure on the quarterback. If he has to, even if he gets it out there without getting hit, if it comes out on time you start to get into that mental clock where you're a defensive back. When you know the ball's out, you can feel it. You don't have to see it to know it, and you can play the ball. Your ball skills take over, and you can jump routes. You can bat the ball away. The timing becomes reflex. You know, you know it's there without even seeing the quarterback throw it. So I like making the quarterback throw it on time when it's ready to throw, and letting your DBs play and making sure they know the ball's coming out. You got to be ready for it and jump the route if you have to.
Bill Saints Sunday, 1 o'clock kickoff. It's a Fox Network game, but you, Steve, you have a role to play with CBS Sports Network pregame.
Yeah, right? I think I'm going to be on the Topps pregame show in CBS Sports Network, and just as a pregame, it's a Fox game. So
what's they called? That other pregame
show? Pregame show.
Yeah.
And with Adam Schein and those guys.
Okay.
I think I'm going to do a couple of reports from there, at least one. That'll be the extent of my day for broadcast, because it's a Fox game. They just want a presence here, and I'll go out, give them a report, and go back to the tailgate.
Steve, thanks. We appreciate
it. Thanks, guys. Good seeing
you. Steve Tasker making his weekly regular visit with us. When we come back, Donald Jones is going to break down some nuts and bolts on Kelvin Benjamin and what he might provide this Buffalo offense. That's coming up. John Murphy Show presented by Napa Auto Parts on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Well, the day seems to be flying right along, really. Steve Tasker always adds to it. We were happy to have Cadet. Doesn't want to go by Traveras, just Cadet.
Right.
It's kind of a one-name, rap star or something. Cadet. Ladies and gentlemen, Cadet.
The stage name.
Yeah, stage name, Cadet. Mm-hmm. He was with us at 12:30. Trey Wingo coming up at the top of the next hour from ESPN, the NFL live show on ESPN. But right now, as we do every Tuesday, right around this time, it's time for a deep dive into the nuts and bolts of the game with Donald Jones, former Bills wide receiver. It is Nuts and Bolts, presented by Napa Auto Parts. Shop and save. Collect points every time you shop with Napa Rewards. Nuts and bolts. The lug wrench is flying around. You know, I was talking to, speaking of lug wrenches, you know those wrenches, right? Mm-hmm. Our buddy Mark Kelso, we got to ask him. I didn't realize this, but this is a total side note. Kelso was telling me the other day that NASCAR is going to standardize the lug wrenches that pit crews use, because some teams have like supercharged lug wrenches that will take a lug nut off in like 0.8 seconds. Like, it's an unfair advantage.
I was talking to someone last week, and we were talking about, we were talking about the Patriots and how many times they've been caught doing different things. And I was like, listen. This is just the world we live in. Like, people try to find a way to get any type of advantage that they can get until they get caught.
Right.
They're going to do it, So that doesn't even shock me, but that's amazing.
I think that goes on a lot in NASCAR racing. I'm sure
I need that when I'm changing a tire on the side of the road.
All right, nuts and bolts. No more lug wrench discussion. Donald Jones breaks it down, and we thought with coming off the mini-buy and with the new addition coming to the Buffalo offense, Kelvin Benjamin, that we should probably take a look at exactly what Kelvin Benjamin might mean to this Buffalo offense. And mm-hmm. Donald has isolated a couple of plays and is ready to talk about a couple of plays with Kelvin Benjamin, some of them against the Bills back in week two, huh?
Yeah, he caught a few passes against the Bills back in week two. The first one that we're going to talk about, you got to start off with just talking about the respect that Kelvin Benjamin gets. So, we have the advantage of having like all 22 video, but what you can see is you'll see teams actually play Kelvin Benjamin differently than they play everybody else, and that's just because they respect him, and so what we had back in week two was you had the Bills actually against Kelvin Benjamin. Jadavious White looked like he was more in a cover three type of look. He was back off, and that just means that he respects him, and he's trying to give him some space because he doesn't want to get beat over the top down
he's
the field.
10 yards off of him.
Exactly. He's about 10 yards off of him. And what you got on this play was you had Kelvin Benjamin. We had him on the show yesterday, and he was talking about running those big sixes, right? And the big six, the end cut, well, that's what he ran on this play, where he just rolled right into the route. And Cam Newton and Kelvin Benjamin really had the timing down, where it was like as soon as he rolled into that route, as soon as he rolled off that outside foot, that ball was right on him. And Tredavious didn't have enough time to even catch up or do anything That's where Kelvin Benjamin is dangerous. Those in cuts, 15, 20 yards down the field, you got to respect it.
That's what Tyrod Taylor's going to have to get used to, right? Just throwing it on time, anticipating the cut right there. Yeah. Another play, and it comes from the Buffalo game. It was we talked to Kelvin about it yesterday, the big hit down on the goal line by Jordan Poyer, which both players came up a little shaky after that one. But what it does illustrate is how much of a red zone weapon Kelvin Benjamin can be, huh?
Now, I want to start off with talking about the Panthers did a good job, and I hope the Bills do this as well. They move Kelvin Benjamin inside and outside, you know, and hopefully the Bills move him around and don't just put him at the X, you know, because it's easier for teams to really focus. In this play, the Jordan Poyer hit, they actually lined Kelvin Benjamin up in the slot, you know, and he ran a seam route. And if you use Kelvin Benjamin running a seam route, and let's just say you have a Charles Clay on the other side running a seam route or even running like a flag route, what that does is whoever's the safety has to pay attention to that. And now you have one-on-one with Kelvin Benjamin coming over, and all Tyrod Taylor has to do is fit that ball in there. And this is what we're talking about. This is why I wanted to talk about this play, because Cam Newton knew he had Kelvin Benjamin, and all he did was put that ball in that window. And Kelvin Benjamin would usually go up there and make that catch. Now, the Bills, Jordan Poyer came over and made the big hit, but Tyrod Taylor has to understand that he can do this. He can fit that ball into that tight window with even with a guy covering him and even with a safety coming over the top. Tyrod Taylor can put that ball up high where nobody else can get it, and Kelvin Benjamin is going to go up and get that ball for him.
Kelvin Benjamin, not a one-trick pony, though, Donald. And there's a play from Panthers game against Tampa Bay that you want to talk about where the Bucs were in kind of a cover two defense, and Kelvin Benjamin is a weapon against that defense.
Yeah, Kelvin Benjamin. And you know, once again, now this time Kelvin Benjamin was actually lined up on the outside, you know, and this is what I'm talking about. Move him from the outside to inside to the other side of the field. But on this particular play against Tampa Bay, he was lined up on the outside. And we call this a cover two beater, cover two, cover four, but especially a cover two. And what you had was you had a cover two because they respect Kelvin Benjamin. You had a cover two to this side of the field. You can see the safety come wide. You can, you know, you the other side of the field, they played totally different. They don't respect those receivers like they respect a Kelvin Benjamin. So what the Panthers did was they ran a perfect cover two beater, which is you stem in, you go up the field, attack the safety, and then you run a flag route. And Kelvin Benjamin ran it to perfection. He stemmed in. He ran up the field. He attacked the safety like he was supposed to, and he came out. And Cam Newton put that ball on him. And Kelvin Benjamin, once again, what does he do best? He goes up, and he boxes out, and he goes up there to get the football at its highest point. They teach all receivers to do that. They all can't do that. Kelvin Benjamin can go up there and get that ball, pluck it out of the sky. That's what he did on that play.
His high point is higher than anybody else's high point.
I would think so.
He's a giant. Another play we want to talk about, it's Carolina against Detroit and a touchdown pass to Kelvin Benjamin. And as I said, it's the guy can do more than one thing, and he's especially valuable in the red zone. And you got to give him credit, I think, Donald, for his versatility. You know, it's not like he's just running, seam routes, or he's just doing, quick ins and everything to get open. He can do a lot of different things.
You know, the biggest thing is, and people talk about his speed and not creating separation and all that stuff. Well, he's not the fastest receiver. So when we get out there on Sunday, or when they get out there on Sunday, you're at the game watching, or you're watching on TV, don't expect this dude to just blaze past DBs. It's not going to happen. But what you will get is, in this particular play against the Detroit Lions, he actually, now he lined up on as the X. You know, he lined up as the one receiver. And what you had was, you had so many guys on the other side of the field. So you had Kelvin Benjamin in a one-on-one situation and Tyrod Taylor. If you see a one-on-one situation, if you don't see the safety getting wide, you have to throw the ball to Kelvin Benjamin. I'm sorry. He is that type of matchup. If you don't see that guy getting wide and you see this one-on-one, throw the ball to Kelvin Benjamin. He's not going to blaze past anyone, but what he does do is he gets off the line of scrimmage. You're not going to be able to jam him, and he knows how to stack. He knows how to stack the DB. And when I say by stacking the DB, what you do is as soon as you get by, you actually have to get back into his hip pocket and get up the field so that the quarterback has enough space to throw the ball on the sideline.
So
he's not throwing it out of bounds.
Yeah, don't let the corner run laterally.
Exactly. You want to stack him so that he's behind you. And the only place – he can't reach through you and catch an interception. He has to go around you, and it's just really not possible, you know. But if you let him run side by side with you, he can make that play. What Kelvin Benjamin does is he does a very good job at stacking, and once he gets to a certain position, he can make the play, you know. And I think this is what I hope to see from Tyrod Taylor, Kelvin Benjamin, and his Bills offense.
I think back to what Brandon Bean said last week, Tuesday, when the trade was made, how 50-50 balls for many receivers become 60-40 chances for Kelvin Benjamin.
They do. You got to throw it to him. You have to just give him opportunities. That's what you want to see Tyrod Taylor do. If he's on the outside and he's one-on-one, give him the ball. If he's in the slot and you're in the red zone, you have him or Charles Clay. But you have to pull a trigger and throw that ball in there. It's not something Tyrod Taylor's done in the past consistently.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now with Kelvin Benjamin and Charles Clay, you have to give these guys opportunities. And if he does that on a consistent basis, you'll see this offense score more touchdowns.
All right, Donald, thank you very much. Breaking that down, what Kelvin Benjamin might mean for this Buffalo offense. And that's Nuts and Bolts presented by Napa. Find your local Napa store online at NapaOnline.com. Back to talk a little more about the Buffalo defense in a moment. The John Murphy Show presented by Napa from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
We're back live at One Bills Drive. John Murphy, Donald Jones. So far today, we've heard from Travaris Cadet, or Cadet, as he prefers to be called. And also Steve Tasker was in studio with us. Donald just wrapped up Nuts and Bolts. If you missed these segments, you can pick it up later on our website, buffalobills.com. A little talk today about the Buffalo defense and who the MVP is. That's our Twitter poll. Most people think it's Micah Hyde. You can weigh in on that at 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-552-550. Call here. Kyle in Blaisdell has some thoughts on Kelvin Benjamin. Kyle, what do you got?
Hey, I just think Kelvin Benjamin's a big superstar in the making. I think that that he transformed with the Panthers, and that I think that Cam Newton and Tyrod Taylor have the same abilities, and I think Kelvin can get into the system, and you know we can get a win here on Sunday, and then we can get back better in the. In the playoff race.
Okay. You know, Donald, you have mentioned, and others have too, how the addition of Benjamin presents an opportunity for Tyrod Taylor and a challenge too. Because we know, you know, what his strengths and weaknesses have been after 2.5 seasons here. And I'm not saying that he can't do this. I don't think you're framing it that way either, right?
No, I'm not saying he can't do it. Yeah. We've seen him do it.
Yeah.
You know, but now it's will you do that more? Will you do that more and be more consistent at just giving him an opportunity to catch passes, you know? And his game, look, the one play that I talked about in Nuts and Bolts, you know, he ran an in-breaking route, and Cam Newton threw that ball before he was even coming out of that break. You know, that's not Tyrod Taylor's game. It hasn't been. It hasn't been, you know? And so let's see if he can do that on those big sixes like he was talking about. Yeah. You know, throw it as soon as he comes. Throw it before. As soon as he turns around, that ball is on him. He can catch it and make something happen, you know. Yeah. Or when you get down in the red zone, those tight windows. Like we saw last year with Justin Hunter. You know, make those throws. That throw a lot more. We saw it with this year with Nick O'Leary. You know, those seam type of throws. If you line him up in the slot, you have Charles Clay in the slot, they have to pay attention to both those guys. You're going to make a seam throw to one of those guys, you know, throw the ball up high where nobody else can catch it but one of those guys.
And, you know, I think I sense that this addition of Benjamin to the Buffalo offense comes at just the right time for Tyrod Taylor. We've talked about it on the show. I feel like I've talked about it a lot the last 2 weeks, how just the type of throws he's been making, the type of throws Tyrod's been attempting over the last couple of weeks, to me, indicate progress, a comfort level. More confidence, more trust in what he sees. And now all of a sudden you throw in Benjamin and the return of Charles Clay. And, you know, if Tyrod were struggling and if he were, you know, missing throws and not playing well, you know, then he might feel pressure like, oh, now what? Now I got to accommodate this new guy. No, I feel like now with Benjamin coming in now, it's like Tyrod's, you know, if I can read his mind, which is totally unfair, but he's probably thinking, all right, things are going pretty good, and now look what I have to work with.
Yeah,
right?
I got a new toy to play with, you know, and yeah, he has his guy, Charles Clay, coming back. He has Jordan Matthews back on the field. He still, well, hopefully we'll see what happens with Zay Jones here as we move through the week. But if you have him out on the field, or even Deontay Thompson, who yeah. he has that familiarity with, you know, he's shown that he will throw it to him as well. Well, now you add a Kelvin Benjamin in there. And like I was just talking about on the Nuts and Bolts segment, teams play him differently than they will on everybody else. You know, so what you do is you move him around. Move him around a lot so that they don't get a beat on exactly what you're trying to do. But when he is on that one receiver side, pay attention to where the safeties are. You know, they might roll the coverage to him, and that's going to free somebody else on the other side up, you know, and you throw it to the one-on-one, to the person who has that one-on-one matchup. That's what the best quarterbacks in the league do, all right? Tom Brady, if he sees Gronk one-on-one, he's throwing him the ball. If he saw Julian Edelman one-on-one, he's throwing him the ball. I mean, look at the best of them. Aaron Rodgers, that's what they do. If they see a one-on-one matchup, they're going to exploit that matchup. That's what Tyrod Taylor has to do now. Totally read the defense. Oh, he's one-on-one. Let me get him the ball. Or, okay, they're rolling to him. That means Charles Clay one-on-one. Deontay Thompson's yeah. one-on-one. Jordan Matthews is one-on-one. Everybody else is covered. We can just dump it down to Shady because they're paying attention to the receivers.
Maybe I'm getting too far ahead of myself, but I just get the feeling Bills might be on the verge of a whole new offensive look.
I hope so.
Or at least an
so.
Enhanced offensive look.
I hope so.
Which includes the running game.
I think the best thing is the Saints don't know what they're going to do.
Yeah.
The Saints have no clue what the Bills are going to do, because the Bills, even before Kelvin Benjamin, have been doing a bunch of different things, you know, in the run game, in the passing game. Well, in the passing game, you see those deep crosses and things like that. But now you add a Kelvin Benjamin, and the Saints are like, all right, they have no clue what they're going to run.
All right, interesting stuff. We're going to talk with our next guest about it as well after the top of the hour. Trey Wingo is the host of ESPN's NFL Live. We have not talked with him since the big trade last Tuesday night. And we'll talk with Trey Wingo about the addition of Kelvin Benjamin, plus where the Bills stand at midseason, plus the rest of the NFL. Trey Wingo standing by to join us coming up in the next segment. Come on back for that. The John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts. From One Bills Drive, this is Buffalo Bills Radio.
Radio Network Sports Update.
Those players off today here at One Bills Drive. They come back tomorrow to get to practice and get ready for the Saints. New Orleans with a 6-game win streak they will bring to Orchard Park. They are the second-ranked offensive attack in the NFL, so it'll be a challenge against the Buffalo defense, which has dropped to 22nd in the league. That is worse than last year's defensive ranking at the end of the year. Bills still waiting to see whether rookie wide receiver Zay Jones can return to the lineup. Suffered a knee injury last Thursday against the Jets. Tight end Charles Clay, cornerback E.J. Gaines, also day-to-day. The Bills should have a better idea at the end of practice tomorrow as to whether they'll be able to participate. The early forecast for Sunday calls for cloudy skies, slight chance of rain, a high of just 43 degrees. Bills and Saints, Sunday, 1 o'clock, New Era Field here in Orchard Park. The NFL late yesterday suspended Tampa Bay Bucks wide receiver Mike Evans for one game for his blindside hit on Saints cornerback Marshawn Lattimore, which led to a sideline scuffle. Evans will appeal the suspension, according to ESPN. He was flanked 15 yards for running across the field and drilling Lattimore in the back and then pouncing on him when he hit the ground. No suspension, no further discipline for Bengals wide receiver A.J. Green and Jaguars cornerback Jalen Ramsey for their scuffle in their game on Sunday. San Francisco 49ers, a week after trading for Jimmy Garoppolo, still are not ready to throw him in the starting lineup. Niners coach Kyle Shanahan, who has maintained since they made the trade that they will decide when he'll go. It'll be a week-to-week proposition. The early plan for this week, according to Shanahan, says they will have Garoppolo as a backup to rookie C.J. Beathard in their next game. And Mike McCarthy of the Green Bay Packers says his offensive line could be in trouble. Right tackle Brian Bulaga left last night's loss to Detroit with what's believed to be a significant injury to his knee. Sabres tonight, game night. The Sabres back home for a matchup with the Washington Capitals. The Caps coming off an overtime win over Arizona last night. Face off 7 o'clock at the game on NBCSN. Sabres at the KeyBank Center at 7 o'clock. And that's your update of sports.
This is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
McCoy at the 10, at the 5, into the end zone. Touchdown! And a great run.
He's in trouble. He is dropped. Kyle Williams dropped it. Oh, baby, what a hit. Tyrod Brooks.
Tyrod on the run. Nobody in front of him. Touchdown!
There's T-Mobile into the end zone.
Boy, cuts to the right.
Outrunning everybody. 10, 5. Touchdown! Buffalo!
Live from One Bills Drive, this is the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts.
Welcome back to the show. John Murphy, Donald Jones from our One Buffalo studio in Orchard Park. And joining us on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline, normal Tuesday visitor with us, he is the host of ESPN's NFL Live, soon to be co-host of Golic and Wingo on ESPN, 3 weeks away. Happy to have Trey Wingo on the line with us. Trey, John Murphy and Donald Jones here in Orchard Park. Thanks for joining us today.
Always a pleasure, guys. How are we?
We're doing well. We've been kind of taking stock of the Bills, and they're eight games to go. And this is one of the reasons why we love talking with you, to get your kind of big picture perspective. Where do you think the Buffalo Bills are at the midway point this season with their 5-3 record?
Well, you know, look, obviously they're in position to maybe do something that hasn't happened since 1999, which is find a way to sneak into the postseason. But the last game was a little concerning.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you had a Jets team that has shown signs of life, but you know, there have been two times this year where I've thought, okay, let's go, Bills. You want me to buy in? Let's buy in. And that was the game where they went to Cincinnati, and then they lost. And the game on Thursday night where I'm like, all right, I'm all in. You guys are 5-true. You guys are rolling. You had a big home win. Let's go. You got contributions from the wide receivers, which hadn't really happened. And then they go get smoked by a Jets team, 34-21 on a Thursday night. And, you know, Richie Incognito was right. Everybody hates playing the Thursday night game.
Yeah.
But you know what? You still have to play them.
Right.
And that was – if I'm a Bills fan, I'm a little disheartened about what I saw. However – that's tempered a little bit by the idea that we did get maybe a guy that can help us in Kelvin Benjamin at the trade deadline.
Hey, Trey, what about, and we're going to get right back to the Bills here, but as we talk about how the Bills looked, and there have been two games that, you know, you don't know if you really want to buy into this team, what about the rest of the AFC? You know, I feel like there are a bunch of teams all throughout the AFC that are kind of around the same.
Yeah, this is the most week-to-week season I can ever remember. Look, I firmly believe that the Patriots are going to be there when it's all said and done. But they have not looked like a dominant team for most of the season. They've just found ways to win games,
mm-hmm.
which is what Bill Belichick tends to do. You know, at some point we were all in on Kansas City after a 5-0 start, but they're 1-3 since. The AFC South is just going to beat each other up. And then there's Pittsburgh at 6-2. Pittsburgh is an interesting team. You know, I think that when push comes to shove, they have the weapons to last with anybody. And they may be the team that is the biggest challenge to the New England Patriots. And, you know, if they're ever going to do it, it would be this year, because they get New England at home later on in the season. I mean, normally they're playing up in Foxborough, and if they can win that game, they have the inside track to maybe getting home field advantage, which they've rarely had in the playoffs when you look at their matchups with the Patriots. So the Steelers are a really interesting team. Their defense is really coming on strong. We saw that in their last performance against the Lions up in Detroit in that Sunday night game. But they're really, look, there's going to be a team that comes emerge, but there's not one that you look at and say they are the most dominant. The only reason you even think about New England is because of their track record. Because, look, they have not, I mean, they could have lost to the Jets. They could have lost to the San Diego, I did it again, the L.A. Chargers, you know. That game was imminently winnable for the Chargers, and they just made a couple of huge mistakes. But that's the beauty of the Patriots, is that Bill Belichick has said this 100 times, more games are lost than won. So his goal in every game is, let's not make the mistakes to beat ourselves, let's let the other team make those mistakes. And if that's your philosophy, more often than not, you're going to win.
Hey, Trey, I guess what heartens Bills fans, and Donald and I talked about a little bit yesterday, is when you look at the AFC playoff standings and the Bills sitting there with the sixth seed, the final wild card seed, but you look at the teams behind them, the potential challenges for that seed, Miami, Baltimore, Oakland, the Jets, it's just hard to envision any one of those four making a big run. I know it could happen, but, you know, it's hard to envision any one of those four kind of, you know, turning it on and flying past the Bills in the standings.
You are exactly right. And that's something to be absolutely optimistic about. The only thing I would caution Bills fans is we've had two situations where this season, where, okay, yeah, you've done what you needed to do. Now let's go show me you can do this one thing that has been a problem, like get that statement win on the road. And, you know, that would have been great against the Jets. It would have been great against the Bengals. They got one earlier in Atlanta, and, you know, I'm not taking anything away from that. But at the end of the day, you're going to have to do that again. I mean, we know that Buffalo is going to be very difficult to beat at home. That has been clearly established this season. The issue for them is, can they find a way to do better than 1-3 on the road down the second half of the season?
What do you make of the addition of Kelvin Benjamin, what the Bills gave up to get him, and what he might do for this Buffalo offense?
Well, the most important thing, and the happiest thing if you're a Bills fan, is that you have to believe that both Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott know exactly what they're getting, because they had this guy. They were with him. in Carolina when they had him as a first-round pick, and he wasn't there, obviously, for the Super Bowl season, but came back as made plays. So they believe they can get the best Kelvin Benjamin there is going. I think one of the reasons he was expendable in Carolina is they really like Devin Funchess, who was coming on strong and obviously wasn't on the same contract as Kelvin Benjamin because he wasn't a first-round pick. And they have Shepard and Curtis Samuel, guys that they want to get going on the outside that are a little faster than Kelvin Benjamin. So they had Funchess, who is basically the same player as Benjamin,
right,
and they thought that the long-term play for them might be Funchess instead of Kelvin Benjamin. So that's the move they made. There are a couple of concerns about Kelvin, going back to his days at Florida State when he apparently slept in late and missed a workout for a pro team, which you never want to do as a potential first-round pick. And
right,
then there was all the weight gain that we talked about this past offseason. So those are things you have to be concerned about. But if you're a Bills fan, you have to believe that both Sean McDermott and Brandon Bean, who were with him in Carolina, know those issues, they're comfortable with those issues, and they think they can control those issues.
Hey, Trey, we're talking a lot about the Bills and how they might have improved with Kelvin Benjamin. What about the Saints, though? They seem to be riding very high right now.
Well, it's funny. We were doing this thing on NFL Live the other day about all the NFC teams that can convince themselves they're going to the Super Bowl. The Rams are 6-2 for the first time since 2001 when they went to the Super Bowl. The Philadelphia Eagles are 8-1 for the fifth time in franchise history. The other four times they've made it to either the NFL Championship game or the Super Bowl. So they think they're going to the Super Bowl. And then there's the Saints. The Saints are the third team in the Super Bowl era to start 0-2 and put together six straight wins following. The only other two teams to do that, unfortunately for Bills fans, the 93 Dallas Cowboys, who went back and won the Super Bowl 28 against the Bills, and then 2007 Giants, who started 0-2 and took down the Patriots in Super Bowl 42. So if you're any one of those three teams in the NFC, your fan base is convinced because of past history you're going to the Super Bowl. But the Saints are really interesting because the way they've done it, Donald, is they've turned it around on defense. I mean, what happened again on Sunday? They get the big special teams play, block punt that goes into the end zone for a touchdown, and that's been the biggest turnaround in this team. For the last 3 years, statistically across the board, each season and cumulatively, they were the worst defense in football. During this six-game winning streak, they have become a turnover machine. Now, that's great. You just hope if that's sustainable. That's the thing, because turnovers are like bananas. They tend to come in bunches, and then they're gone. You know, if they can keep this thing going, my God, they can be as good as anybody, because that offense is cooking with that kid Kamara.
Trey Wingo's our guest co-host of NFL Live on ESPN. On the Saints, the old label people would put on them, their offense in particular, was that they're a dome team. Now, the early forecast of our weather here in Buffalo Sunday calls for 40-some degrees, cloudy skies, maybe a little wind. Does that still apply to the New Orleans Saints? Are they still better in the dome than they might be outdoors in November in Buffalo?
Well, there was that span from like 2009 to 2014 where they were basically unstoppable in the dome. And then the last couple of years, that's fallen off a little bit. The one thing that makes them a better outdoor weather team this year is their running game. You know, when they went to the Super Bowl and won it and beat the Colts in Super Bowl 44, they actually had great balance on offense, running and passing. They got away from that in the years after that, but right now they have that back. I mean, you have Mark Ingram, despite the couple of fumbles a couple of weeks ago, which is very rare for him, who is an explosive yet powerful runner, and then you have Kamara, who is just so smooth. You saw his lower body strength on a couple of those touchdowns last week where he sort of was almost down and was able to sort of change direction as he was falling and get up on the ground and keep going. The difference in this Saints team as opposed to years past is that they are indeed a much better balanced team on offense, and that's gonna help them, like you said, in these outdoor weather games going forward.
Hey, Trey, do you think some people might sleep on Drew Brees? Everyone knows he's like top five quarterback in the league, but you know, when you talk about the best, you always talk about Brady, Aaron Rodgers. You know, I feel like some people kind of forget about Drew Brees, and this dude is a beast every year.
Well, he is, and the thing that really is impressive about him is the cast of characters around him continues to change. A lot of his receivers aren't there anymore that have made big plays for him, and he's continued to put up the numbers. The offense has always been very impressive, and Drew and Sean, much in the same way Brady and Belichick are always on the same page in terms of football, it seems like Brees and Peyton feed off each other perfectly. I mean, if you're looking around the league and you want to say, hey, find me a situation where the coach and the quarterback are in lockstep and they're very productive, those two come to the forefront. Mike McCarthy with Aaron Rodgers maybe a little bit, but they've butted heads over play calling a little bit over the past couple of years. But Brady and Belichick and Brees and Peyton, to me, are the two that stand out more than any other duo.
Trey Wingo, the host of ESPN's NFL Live, on the line with us, the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. Hey, Trey, what went on in the NFL Sunday with all the fights? A.J. Green, Mike Evans, what do you think was going on around the league? Was there one common thread?
Well, people were frustrated, I guess. But you know, the amazing thing about the A.J. Green fight is that if I was going to pick a receiver that would not lose his cool and find a way, it would be A.J. Green, right? He's the most even-keeled, mild-mannered guy who's a great baller. And it just shows you, I think, the great affinity that Jalen Ramsey has. He's already got a reputation in the league as one of the best trash talkers out there, and he got under his skin. It reminded me a little bit of when Courtland Finnegan and Andre Johnson went at it. You know, I mean, Andre Johnson was the same guy, very mild-mannered guy who just went around him, and Courtland Finnegan annoyed him to death. And he, you know, he got him ejected in that one game when the Texans played the Titans, and the same thing happened on Sunday. And AJ admitted it afterwards. He goes, "Look, he just got under my skin, and it drove me nuts." And that's a great quality to have if you're a defensive back, because, you know, if you can get the other guy so frustrated that their best player on offense is tossed, that's half the battle right there. I mean, forget your skill set. If you can be that annoying, that's a huge plus for you. So, you know, I was crazy, and I, you know, Mike Evans is suspended for that one thing. I still can't believe he wasn't ejected from that game. I guess the refs didn't see it. They must not have seen him coming over. But, I mean, to have a guy come flying out of nowhere and hit somebody in the back, and he owned it up after the game. He said, "I never should have done that, and I take full responsibility." But it was a really chippy Sunday. San Francisco and Arizona had something going on. There was a little bit of that in Miami with the Raiders game. So there was a lot. For some reason, you know what it is? It's about this time of the year when people realize, hey, either we have a chance to make the playoffs or, guys, we're going nowhere. And suddenly that level of frustration sometimes kicks in. Sometimes it's in that way. Or you take a look at the Giants. They gave up a 52-yard touchdown pass on a 3rd and 33, okay? That's hard to do. And it certainly seemed like, as Robert Woods was running by all those Giants defenders, some of them seemed less than enthused about making full cardio effort to chase the guy down.
How bad is it with the Giants, and how much trouble is Ben McAdoo in there?
Well, you know, the snapshot from that game, the two things. One, the play I just talked about. And then in the postgame press conference, he was asked, "Hey, what did you say to the team at halftime?" And his response was, and that was it. And he said nothing else. So I was like, either he couldn't remember or it was so uninspiring he didn't want to share it with everybody. And that's a problem. You know, that's a problem. Look, they have a bunch of issues. The offensive line's a big part of it. As we've seen, whether it's in Denver or with the Giants, it doesn't matter how good your defense is if your offense isn't functional. If you can't move the chains to get at least a couple of first downs to give them a blow, it's not going to matter. And that's sort of been the issue with the Giants, and now that's an issue with the Denver Broncos. But, you know, the interesting thing is, what are they going to do with Eli Manning going forward? Because Eli has not played well. Now, I'm not telling you that I think Davis Webb or Geno Smith is going to help you win more football games this year, but at some point you do have to decide what you have going forward in those two guys, especially if we have a rich quarterback draft here that everyone believes we could have four, potentially five quarterbacks taken in the first round of this draft. So you have to have a very, very honest discussion about yourself going forward. And, you know, I don't think that Eli's in the process of getting pulled anytime soon, but I do think that they need to start thinking about life after Eli at this point.
I mean, if they bench Eli, that's the end for him in New York, isn't it?
Has to be, right?
Yeah.
Has to be. I don't think you can go back to him at that point.
No, not at all.
Go ahead now.
I wanted to move on to the Cowboys. And the Cowboys, you know, trying to make a push to get back into the playoffs, at least stay afloat in the NFC. You have so many teams that are playing very well out there, but they're trying to make a push to get into the playoffs. But the one play in particular going into halftime,
the gap,
I don't think I've ever seen anything like that. And I've been playing football for a long time.
It was unbelievable. First of all, kudos to Andy Reid for calling a very creative play design where he got those offensive linemen down in front of Tyreek Hill to get going. Now, the Cowboys used what would be a very sane strategy, okay? Give them the middle of the field. They had six guys back there, six inside the 5-yard line that came up to sort of make sure that Tyreek Hill didn't do Tyreek Hill things, and lo and behold, he did it. I've never seen anything like that in my life. But I will give the Cowboys all the credit in the world on this front, because after that, okay, that's brutal. They should have been up 11 points at the half. Instead, they're only up 4. And then Kansas City gets the ball to start the second half and marches right down the field and takes the lead to go up 17-14. And all Dallas did after that was punch those guys in the mouth on offense and defense. They said, screw it. We screwed up. We're not worried about it. we're better than you, and we're going to show it to you. And they shoved it down their throats, taking the last two scores to win 28-17. The biggest key I see with this Cowboys defense is the change in the front seven. When Sean Lee is there, when you have David Irving and DeMarcus Lawrence, their front seven on their defense might be as good as, top five, top six, seven in the league. Now, their corners are young, but Byron Jones is a really good safety. And they closed that game out on defense on a 4th-and-7, I think, and they got the interception basically to seal the deal against Kansas City. The only issue for the Cowboys going forward is what happens Thursday with the Zeke Elliott hearing. Look, they can be a functional running game and a good running game without Zeke Elliott, but they're not an explosive running game without Ezekiel Elliott. And as good as Dak was on Sunday, because Zeke wasn't killing people. I mean, he had 90 yards and scored a touchdown, but he wasn't gashing people. You know, Dak Prescott just, he's so impressive, guys. You know, that drive right before the half, they were backed up in their own end zone. It was a 3rd-and-15. He just throws a dart to Dez for a first down. Then he rolls out to his right and throws another dart to Terrence Williams on the sideline. And then for him to keep his balance on that 3rd-and-goal from the 10 when he was tripped up and still find his way into the end zone, that's as good as it gets. And the thing about Dak, which is so impressive right now, is that if you look at his first whatever many starts, 25 or whatever they are, he only has 8 interceptions. And you pair that up with some of the great quarterbacks that have ever played in the NFL, his aversion to throwing interceptions as opposed to the touchdowns he gets as well as the rushing touchdowns, it's really an impressive number. But again, Thursday is a big key because Dallas still gets Philadelphia twice. They haven't played them yet. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, they're thinking they got a sweep. All Philadelphia really has to do is win one, and they're in the driver's seat for that division. But if Dallas can find a way to sweep and keep Zeke Elliott on the field, this Dallas team right now is playing as well as anybody.
Trey, thanks for this. It's always great to talk to you on Tuesday. We appreciate it.
You got it, guys. Always fun.
Thank you. Trey Wingo, the host of ESPN's NFL Live, and coming up in just about 3 weeks, November 27th, the co-host of the new Golic and Wingo show on ESPN. And Trey Wingo joined us on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. Subway, eat fresh. Coming up next, NFL true or false. Donald and I will take a look at that when we return the John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show. If you just joined us, you missed a good one. We had Cadet, Ferraris Cadet, in studio with us, the new Bills running back early on in the show. Steve Tasker joined us at 1 o'clock, Bills special teams ace from NFL on CBS. Donald Jones went through nuts and bolts and took us through some of the plays you might expect to get from Kelvin Benjamin and, of course, Trey Wingo just a moment ago. If you want to catch up on that, it'll all be up on our website, buffalobills.com. Momentarily. John Murphy, Donald Jones here, live at One Bills Drive. Wanted to get you involved, too, in the discussion of the day. It deals with the Buffalo defense. I think we both have some concerns about the way this defense has played of late. And we want to know from you, for the first 8 games, the midseason, who is the most valuable player on the Buffalo Bills defensive side of the ball? Pretty overwhelmingly, the people who have voted on Twitter, and more than 1,400 have, almost 1,500. Pretty overwhelmingly, they say Micah Hyde is the Bills' midseason defensive most valuable player. About 70% of you have voted for that. 16% say Tre'Davious White, the rookie corner. 12% say Jordan Poyer. 2% say somebody else. What do you think? Give us a call. The lines are open, 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. John calling from Alden with a thought on this. John, go ahead.
Hey, John. Hey, Donald. I pretty much agree with the majority of the voters. I say Micah Hyde is our MVP, although Jordan Poyer is probably close second. I think it's a little early, but I think Hyde and Poyer could be the best safety combo in Bills history. What do you think of that?
I think it's pretty early to say that. It's been only a half season.
I didn't have my mic in. What do you say?
Wanted to know if Poyer and Hyde were the best safety combination in Bills history. Way too early to say that.
I couldn't even tell you that if I wanted to. Well, you'd have to.
I'd been think about it, but I would. I'd want to see more than a half.
It's really
half
like
season.
Here's the thing. They're still in their first season together. They haven't even gotten through a first season together. Both of those guys are playing well, but I think to say something like that, you got to kind of do it for some years together, you know. And if they can do it for a few years together, where they're like creating all types of big plays and turnovers and everything, then you can say, man, that's the best safeties together that the Bills have had ever. But it takes time to say something like that.
Yeah, that's way out ahead of us, way, way out ahead of us. You know, we are at midseason and evaluating where the Bills are in midseason, Donald. And we talked with Steve Tasker about some of these issues, a couple of others we didn't get to. But when you talk about Poyer, when you talk about Hyde, and we talked with Steve about the way they put together this roster, Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott, I think it's pretty evident that they scored some major hits in free agency, the Buffalo Bills did. Mm-hmm. Hauschka, Poyer, mm-hmm. Hyde, who am I forgetting? There are others as well.
I mean, Andre Holmes
is okay. Yeah, they needed him. They sure needed him.
He's made some plays for them. They brought back Brandon Tate. They haven't, you know, he's had his days. He's up and down, but they brought him back. Who else did they bring in that wasn't here?
Mike Tolbert has been a contributor, whether you
Pat
like
DeMarco.
His role or not.
I think Pat DeMarco has come on and been a contributor. Yeah, he hasn't caught the ball out of the backfield like what we thought he would, but he's been huge in the run game. You know, they brought in some good free agents here, and they didn't have to spend top dollar for all of these guys. You know, like, yeah, Micah Hyde he got paid, but I think he deserved it. He's been a very good player on a very good team since he came into the league, you know, so he deserved to get paid. Jordan Poyer might be making like a little bit over $1 million a year or something like that. You have Hauschka, who, you know, he's been a very good kicker and has played in Super Bowls and done all of that stuff, kicked on the biggest stages. Everybody else, I mean, you know, they brought in a bunch of guys and haven't had to pay top dollar for these guys.
Deontay Thompson comes in and makes plays off the street.
Right.
Pretty big. You know, it's a pretty big pickup. Cedric Thornton has been a regular part of the defensive line rotation. Sharice Wright was a free agent pickup.
Yeah.
E.J. Gaines was a free agent pickup.
Leonard Johnson.
Yeah, Leonard Johnson. I think it's been they're playing. And, again, some of these acquisitions predated Brandon Bean, but some of these acquisitions have been big in the big picture for the first half of the season anyway. And that's worth noting as well, I believe.
I think you have to point that out. I mean, and for me, the biggest thing is they brought in guys who were starting, guys who were playing well for the team, but didn't have to break the bank to do it. Now, they didn't really have a bank to do it, you know, so they had to do it like that. But the fact that they were able to get these guys here, I think, shows that they, you know, they made some good decisions back in free agency.
All right, time now for NFL True or False. It is presented by Yancey's Fancy, New York's artisan cheese. Some of the stuff that's out there about the NFL, we'd like to take a look at it, maybe a little deeper look at it, and let you know whether we think it's baloney or not, true or false. This came up on SBNation.com yesterday. We all know what happened in the NFL this past weekend with all the scuffles, fights, sideline, on field. There's a headline that says NFL refs were inconsistent in handling fights in Week 9, and that's a problem. Here we are a couple of days after those fights. I would say the league has been not just inconsistent in handling them on the field, but off the field as well. The one-game suspension for Mike Evans, nothing for A.J. Green. On the field, there were some ejections after the fights on Sunday, and some others didn't get ejected. I'm not quite sure. I know what the standard is, I believe, and I know what the rule book says, but I don't think it's been evenly applied here. So, yes, true, I think the league, not just refs, but the league has been inconsistent in handling the fights that they had over this past weekend.
Yeah, I'm going to go true on that one as well. I think it's the league and the refs. You know, Mike Evans to not be suspended, maybe they didn't see him throw punches, but he definitely jumped. I mean, he pushed him down, and then he jumped on him, and he tried to throw a punch in there, which still – to this day, I've been around football for some time now. It never made sense to me why you throw punches
with all that equipment on.
All you're going to do is hurt yourself. Like, rip the helmet off first and then throw a punch. That makes sense, you know. But to throw punches at a helmet, who are you hurting? You know, like AJ.
When you played, were you in fights?
I was in some fights, but it was really just wrestling around. You know, you were.
In the NFL, did you fight?
No, not in the league. No, only in college.
How did those fights turn out?
It turned out just big brawls. It was fun. Yeah, back in junior college, we had a crazy fight. So that's true on that one, guys. But back in junior college, we had a crazy fight, and it was like
Lackawanna versus
Lackawanna. It was spring ball.
Oh, okay.
And it was like our first day of spring ball in practice, and it was an all out just brawl. And we watched it on film. We went back and watched it on film because, you know, we really were like a family. And it was offense versus defense, and that's what it was. Like, we were the offense was fighting the defense. The defense really had some dudes on that side. But it was crazy when we went back and watched it on film. Like, dudes are like
had helmets. They were hitting people with helmets and all types of crazy stuff.
Were you laughing when you went back and watched
it? When we went back and watched it, yeah, we did laugh. Because we had already been, like, punished for it. Coach made us run forever, all types of stuff. And then we got back in the film room, and it's like, oh, look at him. Look, watch this. This is about to happen.
Run that back again.
Yeah, exactly. They rewind in the video. Like, look at so-and-so on the ground. What are you doing?
All right. So, yeah, we both think that's true. The league and the refs were inconsistent in handling some of those brawls.
Yeah.
NFL true or false, number two. Best drive of Kirk Cousins' NFL career this past Sunday in Seattle. And if you missed it, it really was we should have mentioned it with Trey Wingo because it was the game of the week, one of the, I think, great games of the season so far. But the way it was set up, Seattle was on top. Russell Wilson had him up 14-10, a minute 34 left in the game. Crowd going wild up there in Seattle, the classic 12th man. Cousins took his team from the 30, 94 seconds, two timeouts. They won the game, 70 yards, four plays, 35 seconds. That was Kirk Cousins. And, you know, their season was kind of hanging in the balance, by the way, at that point, right? I mean, Washington's got to keep pace there in the NFC East. Cousins made the throws. A couple of others made some big plays. And Washington, instead of being 3-5, goes to the midway point of their season, 4-4. So, yeah, that was the best drive. And he's had some good ones. That was the best drive of Kirk Cousins' NFL career, I believe, this past Sunday.
Yeah, you know, I think when you talk about quarterbacks, I'm going to go true on this one. When you talk about their record right now and how their season hangs in the balance when you have the Eagles just running away from the whole league with their record, they're trying to stay afloat in the NFC, you know, and they were on the road in Seattle. To be on the road in that stadium where you know the crowd is going crazy to do what he did, you know, you got to say that that was probably the best of his career. Now, I'm sure he's had some other good drives, but when you talk about the entire big picture in their season, how it hangs in the balance and being on the road in that stadium, what he was able to do, that's big.
We agree. Best drive of his career. Finally, NFL true or false. The Kansas City Chiefs, who got off to the great start this year. Many people thought this was the year for Kansas City. It might still be, but they've lost three of their last four. We looked at that yesterday. A tough loss in Dallas this past Sunday, 28-17 loss to the Dallas Cowboys. And so are the great expectations dimming for the Kansas City Chiefs? That was a headline in the Kansas City Star yesterday. Great expectations dimming for the Chiefs. They've lost three of their last four. They are still on top of the division, the AFC West, with a 6-3 record. I think this is overreaction. I think this is false. I think the Chiefs are going to be okay. I don't think they're a super team. And even when they got off to the good start, what a 5-0 start, I didn't think they were a super team back then. I think they have, you know, the formula. They play solid defense, and they have been doing that for a couple of years. Alex Smith, we know who he is, and I think he's pretty good. I don't think they're a great team, but I think they're pretty good. I don't think they're an automatic loss, by the way, for the Buffalo Bills in a couple of weeks on November 26th. But I think this is false. I would not give up on the Kansas City Chiefs just yet as far as being a serious contender for the AFC Championship.
Yeah, I think I'm going to go false on this one as well. And I think I still think that they're going to win that division out there in the AFC West. I still think that they're a good team. I still think that they're going to be one of the top three teams in the AFC, you know, and I think they're going to make a strong push once they get in to the playoffs. You know, we'll see kind of how it plays out. But, no, I don't think it's dimming. I never thought that they were a super team. I did think, oh, man, this team is – I tell you what, in the first game, and we all got so, like, we all looked at that team like, man, this is a good team. When they beat up on the Patriots in the first week of the season – but they also lost Eric Berry, and I think that was a huge, huge loss for that team, you know. And for me, it was like, man, that was a great game, but they lost, like, probably their best player, you know, and Eric Berry, perennial Pro Bowler. And so I was like, I don't know how that's going to play out the rest of the season. I think it's starting to come to form now where they're seeing how important he is to that team, and they're losing some games now. But I still think they're going to end up winning that division, they'll be okay.
All right, there you go. It is NFL True or False, brought to you by Yancey's Fancy, New York's Artisan Cheese. Thanks for playing along at home. Let's take a call here. We'll go to Chris in Rochester. Hello, Chris. Welcome. You're on the air.
Hi, how are you guys doing today?
Good.
Good.
Yeah, I wanted to call you guys, and I might be leaving myself open for scrutiny, but I wanted to talk to you about the trade with Benjamin, and obviously he's got his history kind of precedes himself. And he's very good. But I wanted your insight on the opinion of you know, they had a Jai who was on the market, on the free agency market at the same time, and you've got a team that I think you guys were talking the other day about this team doesn't have an identity. And I was kind of wondering what your opinion was on what if we would have got a Jai? What if we would have got him strategically, being that we got to play the Dolphins and we find ourselves in this situation again where we are, you know, hopefully we're not going to settle for mediocrity and go another 6-10, 7-9, 8-8, whatever. But if we would have gotten him, and being that Tyrod does best when he's rolling out, you know, what's your opinion on maybe possibly having, you know, picked up a Jai and running the ball 35, 40 times and kind of luring the defense and trapping them into having to defend the running game to open up the passing game?
You know, if they would have gotten a Jai out, I wouldn't have had an issue with it at all. You know, it would have depended on how much they were trying to give up to get a Jai, number one.
You want to take cares away from McCoy? I don't.
I mean, it's not like a Jai, I think, is a pretty good running back, you know.
Too.
So, yeah, do you want to take carries away? No. But at the same time, it's not like you're going to a you know, a lower tier type of running back. LeSean McCoy is one of the best in the league. A Jai, I think, is one of the better running backs in the league as well, you know. So it's not like you're taking him out and putting in one of the sisters of the poor. But I just don't think it would have happened. Why would they trade?
Why would the Dolphins, knowing they have to play Buffalo twice?
Exactly. That just wouldn't have made sense. I just don't think that would have happened at all.
Either. I don't think that's realistic, but thank you for the idea. Let's go to Les in Buffalo. Hello, Les. Welcome. Les, are you there?
How you doing, John?
Good.
How you doing, John?
Good.
All right. My question is, my question is, since we've been dealing with Philadelphia for a long time, since Jason Peters, and I was wondering if we can deal our left tackle now to them.
Well, the trade deadline is passed last Tuesday, so that's not happening. Maybe are you thinking
no more trades?
No more trades until next year. I don't think that'll happen. But thanks for your call. Hey, time now for our Ad Pro Sports High School Coach of the Week, and we will start in Section 6. It is Mike Vastola from West Seneca West in their first sectional championship appearance. The Indians pulled out a 27-24 win over South Park in the Class A championship held right here at New Era Field. West Seneca West now advances to the Far West Regional, where they will play Rochester Wilson. And speaking of Rochester Wilson, that's where we get our Section 5 High School Coach of the Year, Greg Mortier from Rochester Wilson. His team beat Irondequoit 40-10 in last week's Class A championship. Greg Mortier, in his 17th season as head coach, led his team to their first Section 5 title in school history. The Ad Pro Sports High School Coaches of the Week, which we present every Tuesday here on the show. Donald and I back with more of the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
The John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
And now, what have we learned from today's show?
What have we learned? Presented by Advanced Alarm, providing Western New York's homes and businesses with the finest in security and home theater, the preferred alarm and home theater provider of the Buffalo Bills. We had Steve Tasker in studio with us, and we talked about the Bills at midseason with Steve Tasker. He took a look at the division opponents remaining on Buffalo's schedule. We know they got the Patriots twice and the Dolphins twice, and Tasker thinks that's pretty critical when you look at the second half of the Buffalo Bills schedule.
You got to play well when you do get there because those games are doubly important. There's a lot of things that go into it, no question, but you do leave that door open for success or failure until the very end of the season, which in years past is probably a good thing because we were just hoping to kind of hang in there, you know. Mm-hmm. But this is a season where, you know, if you equate it to a goal, you're kind of saving a score here. You got a 5-3 thing going into the back nine. You kind of want to, you know, you want to keep on keeping on and hang a score up there, try and get 10 wins and get in the exactly. tournament.
It's going to be a really interesting second half of the season. You know, Donald, it occurs to me we've talked about the Bills at midseason for the last couple of days, and we don't know what, you know, we talked yesterday about what we know about these teams. This team, that list was relatively short. What we don't know, what we hope to find out, that list was long. For instance, we don't know where this defense is going, right?
They had the
great start with four spectacular games, and no one was able to get anything against them on defense. And then You know, the last four, they've given up yardage. They had takeaways kind of obscuring the fact that they were giving up yardage. We don't know where the running game is. Is it there on a consistent basis? We don't know. We don't know what impact Kelvin Benjamin will have. I mean, there's just a lot of important unanswered questions.
Yeah. I think there's a laundry list of things. We don't know where this offense is going, if it's going to change totally because you have Kelvin Benjamin in the mix now.
That's doubtful, don't you think?
What is that?
That's doubtful, though. I don't think it'll change.
I don't think it'll change totally, but you know, we don't know how they're going to use him. You know, and that's really what I should have said there. We don't know how they're going to use him, and how it's going to open things up for everybody else. We don't know if Tyrod Taylor is really going to thread the needle and get that ball into him and throw it when he's covered. You know, we don't know on the defensive side of the ball. We don't know where this defense is going. You know, was it just a bad game by the defense, or are we starting to see, you know, over the past couple of weeks, we've seen them give up a lot of points. You know, we've seen them give up a lot of yardage. So are we seeing something different from this defense where they're kind of trending down now? You know, is that what we're seeing? We don't know. I think the only thing that we know is that we have good kickers.
Yeah. Well, I'm just thinking, so what can you hang your hat on with this Bills team through eight games? Special teams in general. The punter has been outstanding. Hauschka has been great. Coverage has been really good, I think, for the most part. You can hang your hat on that. You can hang your hat on the fact that I believe that the first few steps at changing the culture around this team have been taken. And it's been messy. You know, some big trades and some high-profile moves, player moves. But I think that I'm not going to sit here and say the culture has changed around the Buffalo Bills, because I don't think it happens that quickly. But I think they've taken the first few steps to do that with some of the player personnel moves they have made.
You can definitely hang your hat on that one. That's something that we do know, that these steps have changed. You can tell when there's certain plays made, like the one in the Oakland game when the team just crowded around Brandon Tate on the sideline. You can see the guys coming together as a team, you know. So this culture, I think, is starting to change. They're making big plays, which is something they didn't do in the past, make big plays in crucial parts of the game to win the game. They've done some of that this year. So I think just the mentality overall is changing, but there's still a lot to learn about this team.
All right, we'll start learning again tomorrow along with you. We'll start diving into the Bills-Saints matchup tomorrow with Chris Brown reporting from the practice field. Thurman Thomas will join us tomorrow as well, so come on back for that. I want to thank our presenting sponsor, Napa Auto Parts. Find your local Napa store online at NapaOnline.com. Our Entercom board op is Ryan Gates. Production assistance from J.J. Torito, George Blass, Jeff Koltnick, Thomas Hollander, Olivia Merrill, and Shelby Rush, our producer, Jay Harris. We're back with you tomorrow at 12 noon with the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.